Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Good morning.
Good morning.
We've talked the whole night through.
Good morning.
Good morning to you.
Well, well, here we are. I want to congratulate you for being on time.
But that's not what's important.
What's
they
important?
They asked if they could hear a drum roll, and I said, sure they could.
A timpani roll.
A timpani.
Let me hear it. Let me
Look
see
at
it.
This.
Do it. Do it.
Roll it.
Oh, yeah.
...720 WGN, Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris in the Allstate Showcase Studios. We're also live on CLTV. God, it's good to be here on Labor Day.
Good morning.
Wow, I threw out my back this morning. You guys want to know how?
Seems like the last time we were
together. Every time he walks in the studio, he throws out his back.
Sounds like a familiar story.
Yep. Who needs to stretch? I need to stretch.
What were you doing, Pete?
I was making the bed today.
Oh, that'll do.
And why were you making the bed? Tell everybody that.
Because my wife is out of town, and when she gets home today at noon, I'll be just getting off the air, and I wanted it to look nice in the bedroom.
Trying to score brownie points.
Just for the record, I never make the bed, ever.
I don't either.
Ever.
I make the bed every morning.
Never.
Regardless of, no one's going to see it but me, I make it every
morning.
You're
supposed to make the bed. I don't know if you've
That's
watched.
That's good for you, really. I commend you.
Have you seen the video of that general, you know, the motivational speech that's been going around the last few weeks where the first thing you should do in the morning is make your bed because it gives you a sense of accomplishment.
Absolutely.
You're ready to take on the day.
He's correct.
That's very true.
There's an easy
solution. I'm a little on the lazy side.
I always look at making the bed. It's good exercise, walking from one side to the other, one side to the other. So when my dad was an older dad, and every morning when we were kids in high school, I'd say, oh, dad can make the bed. He needs the exercise. So now I want all of you to think of it as a little bit extra exercise for you.
Okay. All right. I'll go for that.
Thank you.
The solution to that problem is just shut your door.
Yeah, but you know it's not.
I do that
there.
When
Andy,
people come over.
You're a bachelor. You don't understand this.
I do that when people come over. The door is closed.
Women
shut the door.
Women want to see a made bed if they're gone for the entire weekend.
Okay.
Okay.
So they need to invent some kind of a cover that looks like a made bed.
I agree. I'm with you.
That's the next million dollar.
Or just put the comforter.
They have that.
Put the comforter right over the bed.
Exactly.
And why so many pillows? We have 3, 6, 9. We have 10 pillows on the bed. I swear to you, we have 10 pillows.
5, 6, 7, 8, 9. We have 10 as well. But they go in an order, and then you have like the nice blanket at the
bottom
of the bed.
Oh, yeah, they have to be in order. Yeah.
So basically, you have to plan on going to bed 20 minutes before you actually want to go to bed to find
uncover
the bed
it, yes.
under the pillows.
And then you take a couple minutes in the morning to make the bed.
Okay.
So I was making the bed this morning, and I bent down, and I went, oh, my God. Oh, my back. And I'm like.
Ugh. Again.
Again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You need to stretch,
Maybe it's
Pete.
You, Dave.
I get
Maybe every time I work with
else.
You, I throw out my back.
Might as well be,
you,
Dave.
This might as well be. Wow. I can show you a stretch that will help you.
Let's do it right here on CLT.
I can do it.
Just stretch. I know how to stretch. I just need to stretch more.
I don't know that it's the stretching that's the problem,
Yes,
Pete.
It is. It's the stretching. I come from a long line of bad posture and non-stretchers. Yes.
Makes two of us.
The McMurray hunchover, rolled in shoulders, too much benching as a kid in high school.
And by the way, your posture looks great right now.
Thank you very much.
I don't think you can help it.
I wear a black shirt. If you're watching on TV, I wear a black shirt so it's slimming.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh.
That's nice. Does anybody have bad dreams? We have a dream analyst coming up on the show today.
Yeah.
Have you,
bizarre dreams.
Like what? I mean, the same ones over and over?
I have some recurring dreams. I haven't had them in a while, but yeah.
How do you feel in the dream?
Are
you anxious, worried? What? How do you feel?
Yeah, I would say anxious and worried. And when I was a kid and I'd watch Creature Features on Channel 9, you know, the original Dracula.
Creature Feature.
You don't remember Creature Feature?
I do remember Creature Feature. Absolutely.
Every time I'm here, I date myself. You know? to show you how old I am. But, you know, you'd wake up with bizarre dreams that, you know, I was in a room with Dracula and he was headed right for me.
I know, but you're an adult now. Do you have reoccurring dreams now as an adult?
Not really, no. But as a kid, I did. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
But I'm curious to know if the dreams, you know, why don't we remember the dreams when we wake up? And did the dreams shaped because of what you saw?
Yeah.
I don't
know. You know, there's all kinds of rationale, you know, as to what the dreams really mean.
Well, we're going to find out.
And we're going to find out.
10 o'clock this morning. Okay, right after 10 o'clock, we'll have the dream analyst on.
I had a lot of questions.
I've had some very strange reoccurring dreams, and we'll talk about that. I don't know if you noticed that Kim Jong-un tested another missile yesterday. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So what's going to happen with that?
It's anyone's. It's just so up in the air right now. We were having an emergency meeting of the UN Security Council today. What comes out of that, who knows? But very stern words from the Secretary of Defense and
the
President.
Yeah, but what do they mean? We keep telling this guy, hey, listen, one more time, don't do it. And he keeps doing it.
And evidently, he's not even listening to people that they're more or less allied with. China.
Right.
And other, you know,
well, China came out yesterday and said, hey, well, wait a second. What are you doing, man? Now you're making us look bad.
Yeah.
You make us look bad, we're gonna be mad at you.
Like any dictator of his ilk, they just function on their own.
This is the
forget everybody else.
This is the sixth nuclear test. The hydrogen bomb was estimated at 4 to 5 times greater than the bomb dropped in World War II.
Hiroshima. Yes, yeah. That's right.
So let's bring
not only that. How about the earthquake that it set off?
Oh yeah, on the Richter scale,
a six point magnitude.
Let's bring up Tom Rivers from ABC News. Tom, what's the update on this? What can you tell us?
Yeah, the latest ongoing right now, Security Council, as you say, meeting again to determine what they possibly can do. It's already the most isolated sanctioned country in the world. And, of course, just last week, China signed up to saying, okay, we'll play ball. And 90% of the goods that are exported from North Korea go to China. So they're the player that really matters. So we'll see what they do today. Other than strong words, I don't expect a whole lot more to come out of that. Our source has been talking to some of the people in the defense ministry in Seoul, and they say that they have signs that it looks like there's going to be another missile launch. So we'll see how that one plays out. It'll be short range, long range, I don't know, but coupled with the bomb test, underground bomb test on Sunday,
right?
It's a worrying time indeed.
Well, the sanctions aren't working. China and Russia condemned the test yesterday. What else can they do? And I'm thinking, okay, Kim Jong-un, what's his end game here? Because he's not gonna attack anyone, because if he does, we'll make his country into a parking lot. So what's his end game? Just to flex his muscles?
Exactly. It's like playing golf with just one club in your bag. And that's kind of the way they've always done it. Saying, you know, we're not gonna feed our people. We're not gonna build great educational institutes. We're not going to do any of that stuff. We're just going to get as good and sharp as we possibly can on the nuclear front and get our missile capabilities up to scratch. And that's all they do. And again, it's everybody comes circling back saying, well, this thing has to be solved by diplomacy, because the people that would be in the crosshairs would certainly be the people of South Korea.
Right.
And how do you get there? How do you convince Beijing to say, look, you trade with a whole section of the world these days. You're making a good little number out of this. Play ball with us, and if you will, you know, really, really put the screws to North Korea, and you'll come out looking like a hero on this whole thing.
We're talking to Tom Rivers from ABC News. I think China needs to step up. That's where China comes in. China needs to help us and say, North Korea, you got to stop. And the U.S. did say yesterday that they're not going to do business or trade with any country doing business or trade with North Korea.
And then about a couple hours after that, we had from the Chinese government saying that's unacceptable. So we don't know what the minutiae of unacceptable is. In light of the fact that a week ago they said, yeah, we'll play ball on sanctions this time around, cutting things like shipments of iron ore, coal, et cetera. I suppose we get down to the area of oil. That's a different matter. So maybe that's what they're talking about.
I feel like China is kind of in, but they're really not. Do you get that feeling?
Yeah. I mean, and in their best interests, they really, really should come around and say, you know, for the best interest of their own country, really, really get tough with North Korea. And it can still be this powerful industrial engine that stocks, if you will, the living rooms, the kitchens of the world. And they can carry on doing that, you know, if they really play ball on this one and come and help the rest of the world.
Tom Rivers from ABC News. Thank you, Tom.
Take care.
All right. So basically nothing is happening.
Well, so the question that I have is the retaliation or the, you know, the answer back that the U.S. did was some military test strikes.
Right.
Sort of in the area.
So we had to flex our muscles, too. Listen, we got this.
Is that happening today?
We're going to have to wait and see.
Right.
That happened last week for sure.
Right. But now this bomb then was even worse than the one last week.
Yeah. 4 to 5 times greater than the one dropped on Hiroshima. Yeah.
It's so scary.
Okay. Let's take a quick break. 312-981-7200 is our phone number. Also, our text line if you'd like to send us text messages. We're going to talk to Ryan Burrow, who just got back from Houston. It seems like the water is starting to subside in Houston. We'll get an update from Ryan coming up next. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. 720 WGN and live on CLTV. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris, Andy Mazur is here for a little bit longer. And we're joined by Ryan Burrow, who was in Houston all last week. By the way, all your updates, fantastic. I mean, you killed it last week, seriously.
Thank you. A lot of it was in a blur. There was a lot going on there, but we got through it.
Well, I have many questions for you because you were staying in a hotel with running water and sewers and everything was fine.
Mm-hmm.
And a running toilet. And then a few blocks away, all the flooding.
Yeah, it was a very strange storm. It did not discriminate as far as one section or one side of Houston versus another. I mean, pretty much everyone got hit a lot, and it's just a matter of if you were on high ground or not. ABC was fortunate enough to put me in a hotel that seemed to be all right, and we were essentially operating out of all of ABC was essentially operating out of that hotel for the first 2-3 days because there were so many alerts and so many warnings and tornado threats and flash flood threats that we really couldn't go out anywhere. So we just kind of became fortunate, I guess, in that perspective.
Paint a picture for me. Tell me what it was like. You walked through those neighborhoods, or you didn't walk through those neighborhoods. You saw those neighborhoods firsthand.
We did the best we could to get into neighborhoods, but, you know, credit the local media out there. I mean, they obviously understand the neighborhoods a lot better than we do, and many of the images that you saw on TV were the result of them understanding and knowing those neighborhoods. A lot of the local media, they were working 24/7. They were sleeping at their radio and television stations, and they themselves had been impacted. You know, we kind of fly in at 10,000 feet and drop in and try to pick stories up here and there, but they were the ones who were actually out there saving people. It was bad. I mean, there was flooding that was 3-4 feet up at some people's homes. There were complete roadways that were completely wiped out, bridges, water under bridges that came all the way up to the top of the bridge. I mean, it was just incredible to see that. And you know, the good thing is, and probably what made this storm so different than like a Katrina or maybe some of these other hurricanes have passed, really, only about 5% of the population was out of power at any time. So that means everyone had cell phones working. A lot of people did. A lot of people had laptops working. And from that perspective, getting information out to people, communicating, was a lot easier than maybe Katrina, where where people were essentially shut out from the rest of the world.
Well, it's been 10 days now, and the water is starting to recede. The damage is not. So those first responders are now coming back to help rebuild. And it seems that the local response and the national response was really honest. They did a really nice job. 10 days in, where are they at today?
Well, you know, there is still one neighborhood in particular that's leaking. There are actually two kind of around this reservoir, and they're purposely leaking for another couple days because the water got so high they were nervous that these dams might burst and create an entirely different issue. So they've been purposely leaking water into these neighborhoods. So those people can't go back. Everyone else, hopefully, though, will start to begin this rebuilding process. I was listening to Brad Melke, who we tag teamed. He's now in Houston. I left Friday and he's now there. He says they actually have been pulling thousands upon thousands of vehicles that got washed away, and they're bringing them to this speedway and basically allowing, you know, to begin the process of either insurance or reselling or everything like that. I mean, thousands. He said there was a Ferrari in there, but that's one of the processes, is all of these vehicles that were damaged, all of the homes as well. They're going to need to be cleaned out for fears of mold,
right?
You know, other things. And
can they be salvaged, these homes?
Some of them are. You know, some people who evacuated and who went to some of these evacuation centers didn't actually take in flooding in their home. They were nervous they wouldn't be able to get out. You know, essentially their homes were on islands. And, you know, when the truck or boat came around and they said, "You want to get out?" They said, "Yeah, because we don't know how much longer we can hang out at our house." So many of those people were able to get home. Many of the people who went into the evacuation centers also were on the phone the whole time trying to meet up with friends and relatives who they could go and stay with. So, Yeah, it's going to be a long, slow process. They said 130,000 homes in Harris County alone damaged, destroyed, or impacted by this storm.
You've seen the footage on TV, and we've seen the people in the shelters. I forgot about the animals because the dogs and cats and the animals were sent up here yesterday. They landed in Chicago.
Yeah.
Yeah, they so what happened during that, and actually there was a lot of chaos around the pets, because many of these people during the storm itself were bringing their dogs and their cats on the bus with them or on the truck when they were getting dropped off at these evacuation sites. The Red Cross at the George R. Brown said, whoa, we're not able to handle them right now because there might be people in here who are allergic. There might be other issues that arise. We can't have the dogs, you know, doing their business all over the place in there. So they essentially told all of these people who had just gotten through all of this rainwater that they couldn't come in yet. And that was creating a lot of frustration. They eventually created a section just for them. Bark, which is the animal non-kill shelter down there, they said they were expecting to take 150 dogs a day, perhaps, just strays. And so what we're seeing here in Chicago is those animals that were already at the adoption centers.
Okay.
They don't have room for. So they're like, all right, let's get them out. Let's get them into safer places. Let's worry about these dogs that are coming in here now. So they're adorable, obviously.
Their little faces were so scared and cute, and they were being, broke my heart.
Some of them aren't old enough yet to be adopted. They still got a couple weeks to go. They're going to spade and neuter them and check them for heartworm and ringworm and things like that, because the humid climate's down there a little different than here. But that's going to be the next thing. Animals are a big part of it.
Pause, Chicago here. Now, one of the things I really appreciated, I would say, is the mayor of Houston, Sylvester Turner. Yesterday, I saw him say, listen, come. We're open for business. Businesses are open. Hotels are open. Games are being played. Shows, if you're coming in for an event, come. We want you to come, which I love, because that's what he should be saying.
Yeah. You know, it didn't take long for the water to start receding once it started to stop falling out of the sky. And once that happened, you could get on the roadways and the airport started working and business did start flowing, because we had a few days there where, you know, trucks weren't making deliveries. And I'm not complaining about this, but our hotel menu got less and less because they didn't have any food. They didn't have employees either. That was another reason. But I mean, you saw a city that just, I mean, essentially everything just stopped, you know? And so
how do you trust the clean water in your hotel? I would be nervous about that. And how do they keep the sewer system? I just don't understand how they can keep that flowing now.
It was amazing. They didn't feel like much of the water was damaged. There was one little community in the northeast part, I believe, of Houston that there were concerns. Obviously, Beaumont is a completely different scenario. They lost their water system, and they've struggled ever since. But as far as the utilities go, and water and even gasoline, everything seemed to be all right. I mean, it was a rain event. It wasn't so much a wind event.
The media likes to wrap everything up in a nice little bow. So yesterday on the news, it was about the cleanup and the water receding. This is going to take years. What are we talking, 10, 15 years to rebuild? Well,
FEMA said that they're going to have a presence there for at least a year. I mean, just they've got to figure out what to do with these thousands of people at these evacuation centers who can't find other places. They're trying to find hotels, apartments for them, and the dreaded T word, trailers, which is not something that they want after what happened with Ike, with all the formaldehyde that was found at those trailers. So, you know, they're going to explore as many options. They're going to try to get people into the best scenario possible.
Yeah, so I think what's good for people to remember is if you want to help today, you know, they're going to need your help in 6 weeks, in 6 months, and even in a year.
Right.
And money, not clothing, not anything like that. I can tell you they've been donating clothing and baby diapers like crazy. The thing they're going to need is money to kind of facilitate where all this goes. It sounds icky, I know, saying that they need money, but that's just what they need. Because there have been cases where people have donated, you know, teddy bears to kids, and they get 60,000 teddy bears, and they got no place to put them. So the best way is money. That'll do everything.
90999 to the American Red Cross. Harvey, I did it. I gave money.
Yeah, it goes right on your phone bill. It's great.
Charlie McMurray gave money. Yeah. Absolutely. It's simple. Ryan Burrow, you did a great job last week.
Thank you. A
wonderful picture. I heard you on everybody's show. And of course, from WGN and ABC News. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Ryan.
Thank you.
It's 720 WGN. Coming up next, we're going to talk Jane's favorite subject, food. We have a chef coming in studio.
I love food.
Are you barbecuing today?
Tailgating. I did a big dinner last night. Am I barbecuing today?
Yeah.
Sure, why not?
It's Labor Day.
Yeah,
I'm going to barbecue.
I can't wait to go to the grocery store.
Gotta grab some meat, so we'll talk food. We associate food and love here at 720 WGN and live on CLTV all together. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris. It's Labor Day, which means entertaining with food. We'd like to welcome in the chef with ConAgra Brands. And from Check Please is Chef Catherine DiOrio. It's great to see you.
Thanks for having me.
Great to see you. What a treat.
Yes.
For people watching on TV, I expected the chef pants, the chef coat. You look like you're going clubbing. I mean, you're all dressed up. You just come from church? What's going on?
Well, I don't. You must not have been to clubs in a while. I'm not sure if this is what the girls are wearing these days.
You look great.
The shoes are great. The whole outfit's great.
Thank you.
Do you ever wear the chef whites?
I do. I do. Obviously, if I was in here cooking for you, I would put something on because... Okay. We don't want to splatter this with tomato sauce.
But you're also the host of Check Please.
I am, yes.
So are you going shooting later today?
No, we were on hiatus from shooting, and we resume this week. So Wednesday I'll be in studio.
How exciting.
Yeah. It's a couple days.
David Manilow is a Chicago guy who produces the show. How's he to work with?
Great. Easy.
Really?
Yeah.
Are you sure about that?
Like you're looking at me like, I don't believe it.
I love David. He's a good guy.
I would like to be guests on Check Please. What do you think
you
about
should
that?
Apply.
How do we just apply? That's what we do?
Yes. Everybody has to apply, I always say. Unfortunately, I have no pull.
Right,
so.
I get it.
Of course, great answer. Yeah. But I'm just a horrible describer on TV. It's like, oh, God, this food's so good. Do you want to describe the whole thing on television? I would be horrible at that.
But it's
this
not just
great.
About the
I'll
food.
Have a beer with it. It's nice.
Yeah, because you go and experience the restaurants.
Exactly. It's about the service. It's just about even like that feeling you get. Or, I mean, sometimes it's just like I was out the other night and I was like, wow, these kids are just probably about 20 years younger than me. I think maybe this isn't my place. You know?
Could you have to check out every restaurant that all the guests recommend?
Yes.
Wow. Mm-hmm.
Could you imagine having Chef over to your house? You'd feel like she's judging you the entire time.
Oh my gosh, no, never. I'm always so excited when someone cooks for me.
Really?
You can literally give me anything. Anytime.
You give me hot dogs, in fact, for Labor Day.
Great. Pete will make you hot dogs.
Explain ConAgra. ConAgra has a million brands.
Yes.
Hebrew hot dogs, Golden's mustard.
It's
Hunt's
kind of all those
ketchup.
American brands that I think people grew up with. Ready Whip, Peter Pan peanut butter, Hunt's, tomatoes, and Golden's mustard. It's Hebrew National hot dogs. Kind of actually all the perfect things to cook today.
Are you a hot dog maker on the grill?
I will, yeah. I actually grill. I like hot dogs.
Hot dogs are so easy to grill. I mean, boom, boom, you're done.
Yep.
Very
simple.
I think
the big thing is some people like to slice them open. I think that's a bad move.
Why is that? I thought you were supposed to slice them open.
No, I mean, some people like that better. I think that all the juice runs out of it and then you lose a lot of the flavor. So I always say not to do that.
What I love about the ConAgra line is that you can dress up the hot dogs with a multiple, of the things that you have that you can put the Rotel on top of the hot dog.
Yep.
You can mix it all together.
You're all about the presentation.
I'm all about
Jane's
right.
all about the wow.
Like.
Okay, right. I have the food, but then I have to do the wow factor and I got to dress it up and dress up the table and make something.
And one of my favorite things in life is to watching people eat. You probably too, you're a chef.
Yes. Well, of course, because it makes you happy.
Yeah.
I think it's just, and I'm Italian, so I grew up and that's a huge part of just being with family, friends. It always reminds me of good times. I guess, honestly, though, with Italians, like, we eat at weddings, we eat at funerals, we eat, you know what I mean? It's just kind of like, if it's happy, we eat. If it's sad, we eat.
Italians, Greeks, Lebanese. You associate food and love. If people came over to my mother's house growing up, she would always say, let me feed you. That means I love you. Come to my home.
Yes. And you'd have, two servings, and my grandma would be like, you're not hungry? I'm like, oh, my gosh.
Right. If there's anything left on the plate you didn't like it, why aren't you eating that?
You offend them.
Yes. Yeah.
And I'm the same way now. It's kind of funny. My husband's always like, Kat, enough. Like, I've eaten. I'm done. I'm an adult.
And when did you become a chef?
So, now it's been 12 years ago because I changed careers. So, it's been about 12 years.
What did you start out as? What were you doing?
I was a litigator.
What?
Wow.
I know.
You're kidding.
Litigator to chef.
Yeah.
And you're like, I've had enough. I just want to cook.
Yeah. Well, what's funny is I used to throw, part of why I made the change is I used to throw these huge parties and do them. I'd do everything, all the cooking myself. And it was before I went to culinary school. And everybody used to always tease me at the court. I was like, well, you should just leave this business and be a caterer and we'll hire you. And one day after a really bad day at work, I was like, ding, ding, And I literally called a bunch of culinary schools. I ended up going to Kendall here in Chicago. And here I am.
When I grew up, I watched MTV as a kid. Now my kid is 12. He's watching the Food Network.
Right.
And it's all about food nowadays with these kids.
Oh,
and then they want to
cook. It's amazing.
Yeah.
It's amazing just how sophisticated children's palates have become now.
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
it's absolutely.
I remember a girlfriend of mine, her son wanted, he was talking to the babysitter and most kids are like, I want to order pizza. Like, mom and dad are going out, right? I mean, that's what I did. He's like, I want a miso glazed black cod. And I'm like, who is this kid? I mean, he's like 8 years old, you know? Yes. And I was like, oh, sorry.
We're searing salmon at our house. I never seared salmon growing up. Right. We fried bologna.
Right, right. Exactly. Right.
Seared salmon.
It's amazing.
Yeah. I'm a piece of bread and butter kid. Like,
right. Enjoy it. White bread, too. Right. Yeah. Here's a question for you. When I cook, I like to clean along the way and put the dishes in the dishwasher.
Oh, boy. Yes.
When my wife cooks, she dirties everything, even plates she doesn't need to use. And guess who has to clean up?
Well, of course, because she's cooking, so it's only natural you should clean.
So when you cook, do you clean as you go? Are you focused on cooking?
It depends. It depends. So when I'm doing prep work in advance, I will clean as I go. But I really believe that when you're cooking, you need to just kind of go with it. Because really, just a matter of like a couple seconds of your eyes off your food, you can
ruin it.
Go from. Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I see you dirtying everything in the kitchen.
Oh,
Kate.
No. I clean as I go.
Do you?
Absolutely. I clean as I go. Because I know at the end, if it's like, because I like to be organized. So if it's organized and it's clean, then I can manage what's going on in the kitchen.
What did you make last night?
Lasagna. And, oh, I love, well, here Italian. So we made lasagna. We had some garlic bread and a delicious salad with a little lemon in.
I just like lemon
on salad. She'd be a great guest on Check, Please.
Right. We're going to talk about that. Before we go to break, I want to ask you the five basic, what are they called? Not stews, five basic sauces.
Oh, gosh. You're putting me on the spot now.
I know, all
the,
right?
Talking, like, all the mother sauces.
There's like the bechamel.
Oh my God, the bechamel, your bordelaise.
You guys are speaking French to me. I don't know what we're talking about here.
I ask every chef. I like to quiz them. Of course. You went to chef school. That's the only reason why I'd go to learn the five
and it's funny,
sauces.
I don't even really make the mother sauces,
I
guess. You did. but now I'm going to sit here and think about it. When you come back from break.
Okay, yeah. The five sauces, you put her on the spot.
I did.
Chef Catherine DiOrio, you can see her on Check, Please. Also the chef with Conagra Brands. And we'll talk about barbecuing when we get back, okay? We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. Aww. 720 WGN, live on CLTV. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuras. We got a chef in studio with us. Chef Catherine DiOrio from Check, Please. And, of course, the chef with Conagra Brands. You can go to ReadySetEat.com. This is all you've been talking about all week in anticipation for the chef.
Because I get so excited to have a chef and be with a real-life chef, not to mention that it's Catherine DiOrio.
Thank you.
We were talking about the sauces.
This is like the highlight of my day.
Let her get through the sauces first we start sauces. Talking about recipes, because Jane put you on the spot. What are the sauces?
Bechamel, tomato, espagnol, velouté, and hollandaise.
I have no idea what that means.
The hollandaise. Velouté. I don't know what that one is.
Oh. Well, it's... Oh, hi, everyone. I'm like,
see?
Okay.
We're in the fishbowl here on Michigan Avenue, so you get people that are walking by kind of
a little distracted.
So the velouté is which one?
So velouté is like a silky kind of creamy sauce. You're going to use cream in it, butter.
Yeah. Okay. Is it like a bechamel?
No. No, it's not as rich.
I'm going to have to look it up.
It's a little lighter.
Yeah.
You guys are losing me at the sauces.
Sorry.
The Bears home opener is Sunday. We barbecue. We tailgate. Brother Ed, Brother Dave, we'll be out there in the South Lots.
Okay.
Falcons at the Bears. What's your favorite tailgating food?
Tailgating food. I like to do burgers, but I like to maybe do a spin on them. So a salmon burger or... Salmon burgers and probably lamb burgers are two of my favorite. Because you can make them in advance, and then you can just bring them, obviously. The patty's already formed, and just grill out. So whether you're kind of going tailgating on the go,
Jane,
or...
you know Brother Ed. If I showed up with a salmon burger, he'd punch me in the neck.
Well, here's the thing with Brother Ed. Because Brother Ed is, I mean, he's the most famous tailgater that you're going to see at Soldier Field. He's out there every game, 8 a.m., with the whole thing
8 a.m., he's in line at 7.
Oh, see? I don't even know that.
Who's Brother Ed?
My brother Ed.
Oh, your brother. It's your actual brother.
Big Brother Ed.
He would bring steaks, and he'd bring pork chops, and he'd bring regular burgers, and you bring the salmon burgers.
But he does.
Everybody knows that that's something you would do.
He does marinate the shrimp. Yep. That he has on occasion. He had pork chops one week, and it's very difficult.
It's
pork
very
is
fancy
tough.
Now.
Pork is tough to cook on the grill. You can't overcook it.
Well,
it's going to taste like a shoe.
Yeah, you got to be careful. Marinating it will help, though. Brining it will help.
Oh.
So that will help a little bit. And then, obviously, you just have to cook it kind of low and slow.
So is it all about the prep when you're before you're going to a tailgate or before you're doing a Labor Day you know, barbecue this afternoon?
Well, I think so, because I think, again, it comes back to, like, spending the time with your family. You know what I mean? Yeah. And so, like, you don't want to be, like, stressed and doing something that takes a lot of time. You don't want to be making mother sauces over the course of the whole day. So, you know, you'd rather just kind of do things that you've, like, prepped the night before. You can do all the marinating the night before. That way things are just kind of ready to go. Throw them on a tray, bring them out to the grill, and go. So, and then obviously, again, you know, if you're making any of your sides, and if you're going to do traditional sides, any kind of coleslaw or salad, fruit salad, all those, they actually taste better the next day. Yeah, so you can make them the night before, right. And then they sit and they marinate and all the juices.
Why is that? Because they sit in the refrigerator. You want it cold. It tastes so good.
It does. Well, and all the flavor is just kind of condensable. Exactly.
Yeah, delicious.
So,
now, I'm loving this ReadySetEat.com. Yeah. That is the website. That's the Conagra brand website. And really, it's inspiration. It's how-to videos.
Right.
It's giving you ideas. It's recipes. Yes. I mean, it's a great website. I was on it last night.
And it's great because it's really simple. I think that's the other thing, is it's not intimidating. So kind of no matter what your skill set is in the kitchen, you can go there. You can find something. You can, you know, say, okay, even something for the kids, you know, like, hey, you guys take care of this. You know, there's a peanut butter nacho packet. So the kids can break up a bunch of, like, graham crackers, throw some chocolate, throw some marshmallows in there, and then you wrap it up in a little foil packet, throw it on the grill. When you open it, it has this, like, gooey peanut butter and, you know, chocolate and all the things kids love. But you actually don't have to do it. I mean, if you have kids, you can give it to them.
While right. You're doing,
like, what kids
else.
Don't like to, like, play with food and crumble
exactly.
things up, destroy everything.
And they get involved. It's a family event.
Exactly.
Yeah.
What's the biggest mistake people make with meat? Do you have to bring it out and let it sit on the counter for room temperature?
Yes. And I think under-seasoning. I think what happens is because you need a lot of salt on it, and people get nervous. They're like, oh my gosh, it's going to be too much salt. It's going to be too much salt. It's almost like never enough salt.
You
when
can
it comes
never,
to a steak.
Ever have enough salt in anything.
Yeah. Well,
yeah,
I'm a big salt guy.
You got to taste that's food before you salt it. Yeah. But I do believe, chef, that you have to add salt to your foods.
Yes.
But you don't go crazy with the salt.
Yeah. I think it's, you know, it's a flavor preference. There's, because when you go out to eat at restaurants, the food is heavily salted, which is a lot of times why sometimes you feel a little like swollen afterwards. But it's also what makes it taste so good. There's a lot of butter. There's a lot of oil. There's a lot of salt in it. So I think when at home, though, our natural inclination is to salt less because you're seeing how much you're putting in and you're thinking, oh, that's too much. That's too much. But when it comes to meat, I think under seasoning is kind of everybody, a lot of people don't season it correctly. I say keep going.
We talked earlier how we all grew up with food. What was the food that you remember that your mother or grandmother made? Let's start with Jane before the chef. What was the food?
Well, pasticho. It's Greek. It's the Greek version of lasagna. I'm sorry to all the Greeks out there that I just said that, but it's like meat and cheese. You know what a pasticho is.
Yeah, of course.
I mean,
that
just reminds me of, like, it's home cooking. It's Greek. It's a staple at the dinner table.
Grape leaves. They call it wada anim for the Lebanese.
Dalmadas.
Grape leaves.
Oh,
oh,
I love
so
dalmadas.
The rice. Yes. And the lemon and the lamb.
Is that yours?
Yes.
Is that yours?
I love it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My friend's mom, actually, she's Lebanese. She was just in visiting from Beirut, and she actually taught me how to make them. And but the Lebanese are slightly different because theirs are a little thinner than you'll find with the Greek dolmades. And
we're
they
the better
pack
version.
Them naturally, of course. Although, I don't know. I don't want to get into this. There's not even Greek and a Lebanese. So.
Which is very simple
so
to
delicious.
Make. You put the spices together and always add cinnamon to everything, it seems like, with that food.
Especially with Eastern Mediterranean. Yeah, you'll see a lot of cinnamon in it, which is nice.
How about you growing up?
So probably Sunday gravy. So pork neck, ragu.
That's so
great. So it's just so good. And it was just, it reminded me, we used to go to my grandma's every Sunday and she would make it. And my grandma was about like 4 or 5. I mean, like literally so tiny. And then she had a pot that was about the same size as her.
Of course.
She'd be like, you know, on a stool, like stirring it. And, you know, I have a ton. I had 14 first cousins. So it was all of them, their parents. And we would just, you know, have like a big Sunday dinner. So it's nostalgic, but it's also really good. So
I always felt our house smelled like fried onions because my mom would fry onions and always add it to something. And she would like to just have them on the side.
At least that's a good smell.
I mean, growing up, if you walked into the McMurray house on Sherwood Avenue in Peoria, fried onions, that's what it smelled like.
But, but then when someone fries onions, you walk into a house now, or maybe your wife is cooking fried onions and you walk in, you smell that. Doesn't it bring back memories of old and make you feel all warm and fuzzy inside?
My wife picks up the phone and orders. You know what? Thank God my son Charlie loves to cook now because my wife is now learning recipes. Really?
Oh. Yeah. So did she not cook before?
Never.
Really?
You're
the cook in the family.
I made every dinner.
Yeah, no.
Absolutely.
Catherine, Pete texts me. He goes, what do I do with these chicken? They're just sitting in the pan. Like, how do I make them taste good? I'm like, Well, first of all,
Jane's my go-to. If I can't get a hold of my mother, Jane's number two.
Well, you know, it's not, it's better than, a lot of times I get questions. So I had these strawberries for about a week in my fridge. Do you think they're okay to eat? I'm like, you know what? Smell the food. It'll tell you if you should eat it or not.
Right.
Look,
if it
at
smells
it, smell
bad,
it.
Throw it in the garbage.
Right.
The website is readysetteat.com. Yes. Very simple to follow. All yes. the ConAgra brands are on there. You yes. can check it out. And Check Please is
so we
still
start.
On.
Yes, and we start. We don't have the exact air date yet, but it will be the second week of October.
Okay.
So
you,
roughly
you shoot
in there.
The whole season right away?
So yeah, so we shoot it all summer and then into early fall.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, we'll be wrapping in a couple weeks.
David Manilow, who's produced that show for years, his brother John, who I know very well, John's Place and yes. White Oak Tavern.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Over in Roscoe Village.
Although they'll
Lincoln
never
Park.
Be on the show because it's a conflict of interest. So
what?
I know. It's
really?
Sad. Yeah.
Wow. Tell David we said
David's
hello.
Very serious about it. So,
Chef, thanks for coming in.
Thanks for having
you.
Me.
It is
thanks.
9:59. We're live on CLTV and 720 WGN. ...720 WGN, Jane Monzuris, along with me, Pete McMurray. Do you have reoccurring dreams?
I had reoccurring dreams when I was a child. I had a reoccurring dream, but I don't anymore, but I do have a lot of dreams.
I have reoccurring dreams. I'm naked in my dreams. I meet celebrities in my dreams. Our next guest has been studying dreams for over 25 years. Was that the wrong thing to say, that I was naked in my dreams?
Now everyone just got
it's
an gotta image
mean something.
In
He's going to tell me that I'm crazy.
He's wearing a sweater. What is that?
Our next guest has been studying dreams for over 25 years. He's a professor at Drexel University in Philly. He is the real deal. His book is called Dream Patterns, Revealing the Hidden Patterns of Our Waking Lives. It's Johnson Miller. Johnson, I hope I didn't give you a bad visual of me being naked.
Well, I heard something about a sweater in there, so that's safe.
Wait a second. dreams are interesting to talk about because you're a guy that analyzes dreams and you wrote the book about dreams. What does it mean when you're naked in a dream? What does that mean?
It means... it can mean a whole lot of things. That's part of the point of the book, is this is all so personal. And anytime anyone comes out and tells you, here's what it means when you're naked in a dream, you should take that with a grain of salt. So how often do you dream about being naked in dreams?
Not very often. I've been having reoccurring dreams, and I'm serious, the last 6 months about disappointing people in my dreams. And I wake up very depressed. It's like, oh, my God, I just screwed up. I did something wrong.
So there you've got a pattern going on.
Right.
And so you have this occasional dream where you're naked. Yeah, it probably doesn't mean much of anything. Or if it does mean anything, it's nothing important to you because it hardly ever comes up. But it's a natural dream. We all have it. But now having these repeating dreams of disappointing people, now that means something because you're constantly having these dreams. We dream about the things that are important to us. That's why I emphasize dream patterns, like in the title. There's so much noise in our dreams, so many things that go into making them up. One of the ways to cut through that noise is to pay attention to the long-term patterns. So if you keep dreaming about disappointing people, well, then that's a clue to pay attention to your daily life and see, well, where might you be feeling that you're disappointing,
right?
Disappointing people, and then perhaps you can resolve that.
So in daily life, so what we're doing in our daily life, that has an effect on our dreams. Because in daily life, I think I'm an overall positive, happy person, but I do have dreams where I wake up, something terrible has happened, I'm in a panic, my heart's pounding, and then I wake up and realize it was a dream, and I have to calm myself down. Is that due to outside stresses in your real life?
Yeah, so it could be. I mean, certainly our everyday lives are shaping our dreams, and it can be as simple as, you know, you watched a movie the night before, and then some element of that comes into your dreams. And that's no big deal. Just at night, many of our dreams are simply processing things from the day before, just run them there through our minds, and send them to the side. They don't really mean anything. I wouldn't bother interpreting them. But if you're having, like you said, there's some disconnection there between your waking life and your dream life. You're feeling you're happy-go-lucky, but then if you're having frequent dreams about expressing that sort of anxiety, then it could be a clue again to look at, well, pay attention to your daily life. Wait, look for feelings.
What is going on?
Sort of,
I don't know. Now you got me thinking.
Yeah, and I mean, this is a common thing. I have several examples of that in my book where I've experienced that. I have the same sort of thing. Like, I think, hey, I'm totally fine and happy. And then I have these dreams of these animals with big, exaggerated, sharp teeth threatening me. And then I take a look at my life, like, well, I thought I was fine. And then I noticed like this real anxiety there. It was actually there, but it was subtle. I wasn't paying attention to it. And then as I began to notice it, I could see, well, where is this coming from? I realized it wasn't particularly helpful. And so I could just simply watch those feelings of anxiety come. I could let them go. And over time, I was able to let go of that anxiety, and then the dreams changed. All those threatening animal dreams, they just dissolved. And so as we make changes in our waking lives, the changes feed back into our dream lives. And I think that's the power of dreams, is to make the changes in our waking lives.
Right.
Hmm.
Johnson Miller on the phone with us. The name of the book is called Dream Patterns. 312-981-7200 is our phone line, also our text line if you have a question about a dream. I do have one more reoccurring dream, and I don't want anybody to laugh. I'm a huge Bruce Springsteen fan, and I've had this for years, like 30 years, where I go out with Bruce Springsteen, and it seems so real, where we're hanging out, having a great time, and I wake up, and I'm just happy. It's like, man. And then I realize that I didn't meet him, and then I get depressed.
Yeah. So often when we talk about dreams, you know, because of Sigmund Freud, we're all used to thinking of like, oh, what's this, you know, terrible thing about me I've got to figure out, right? But here's this good dream. I assume you are actually kind of into Springsteen.
I am. Yes.
Yeah. Are you kind of obsessed?
A little bit.
Yeah, okay.
Apparently.
Then I would say just enjoy the dream. It's great. There's something that's important to you. You probably listen to his music frequently there. And so just go for it, right? Just enjoy it. This is certainly no dream to be false. It's totally transparent. You like Springsteen, and you enjoy hanging out with them.
It puts you in your happy place. Now,
I'm
Johnson,
okay with that.
A lot of us have lost loved ones in our lives, and a lot of times they come to us in our dreams. It's like sometimes I feel like I'm just hanging out with my dad, like he's really there. One time I got mad at him for not calling me for so long, and then I hung up on him, and I woke up, and I'm like, wait a minute, I just hung up on him in my dream, and he's not really alive anymore. So when we have dreams about those that have passed, are they really there, or we just brings us back to that memory that we have of them?
Yeah, I don't worry so much about causes or theories and explanations. You know, if you pay close attention to your dreams and actually are journaling them the way I tell people to do in the book, you might start to figure out how it's playing out for you. But again, we dream about the things that are important to us. And so even if, you know, your father isn't actually coming to you in a dream, you know, that's someone who was important to you. I mean, you know, I still dream about people who've died, you know, many, many years ago. They're still important to us. And so in these dreams, do they bring us some comfort on that loss? If so, great. Do they keep pointing us to something in our waking lives now in order to help us? If so, great. Do they point to some unresolved issues that we had with that person, you know, your father in this case, some issue we might not have even realized we had with them when they were alive? If so, you can pay attention. What is the context in which we experience them in the dreams? Do we experience the way that we thought of them? Is it happy? Or is there something different about that relationship than what was really existed? If so, then maybe it's pointing to something about your relationship with that person you weren't aware of. And so those dreams can direct you to that, and you can perhaps resolve that. And then even though they're gone, you can resolve some of the issues that you had with them while they were alive, and then
so pay attention to those things and the interaction.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what about nightmares? Jane, you want to introduce your friend who's in the studio with us?
Yeah, my friend Grace has been talking about this for months. But Grace, you have chronic nightmares every night of the week?
I wouldn't say every night. I'd say about 5 out of 7 days of the week.
Five out of 7 days.
And do you wake up in like a panic? Do you remember these dreams? Like how do you know you're having chronic nightmares?
Yeah, sometimes I'm waking up in a hot sweat. My body will fling forward, and then I realize that I'm not in my dream anymore. Sometimes I'll go throughout the day, and then all of a sudden some object or some person will remind me of something that happened in my dream. They're not always positive. Yeah, they're.
So Johnson, what's the cause of a chronic nightmare?
Oh, could be a lot of things. That it's happening this frequently. I would certainly say there's some anxiety, some concern pressing in the daily life, possibly something that you're not even aware of. But I imagine in most cases, if you give it a little bit of thought, some reflection, you'll be able to identify the source of anxiety. And so if you can do that, there's several things. It, you know, depends on what the issue is. Of course, on one extreme, it's, you know, go talk to a counselor about it. Or it could be simply being aware of that source of anxiety, and perhaps If you identify that anxiety as something that's simply not helpful, you can train yourself, get into a habit of, as anxiety arises, letting it go, acknowledging it, recognizing it's not helpful, and letting it go. We're very habit-oriented creatures, and so we can build up this new habit of letting go of anxiety. And like the dream I described previously with the frightening animals, the dream itself will then begin to disappear. Often that's not enough. It could be, you know, if it's a result of some serious trauma in the past, we might need other folks to help us deal with those, with that anxiety. But if you think about, you know, and you're like not just simply not aware of that, some sort of anxiety like that, well, it's a good opportunity to go looking for, because it's probably there having that much, that many nightmares.
Is it important for someone like Grace that does have reoccurring nightmares, or even if you have great dreams, should you journal the dreams so you can kind of find a pattern?
Yes. Yeah. I think the journaling
is smart.
Thank you.
So when I talk about dream pattern, we're talking about recurring themes. It doesn't have to be a recurring dream where it's the same dream over and over again, but it could be recurring types of characters, settings. So instead of just Bruce Springsteen all the time, the pattern could be celebrities of any sort, and that would be the meaningful pattern. But then you got to look at the context for them, the combinations that they're occurring in, and that's going to require journaling. I recommend people wake up in the morning, you write down every dream you can remember, and then every 2 weeks or so, go back through them. And actually, I come up with a formal system for listing the recurring elements so that you can analyze them. So like every 2 weeks, make like a dream report so that you can see those patterns. And then go back over the different reports every few months. You can go back, if you keep dream journals long enough, go back over several years. You can see the changes in your patterns. But really, that journaling is essential for catching the patterns. It's also essential simply for remembering dreams. Now, in the case of recurring nightmares, those are very often easy to remember because they're so powerful and will often wake us up. And waking up in the middle of a dream is the easiest way to remember it. But if you're not, for most of us, writing dreams down creates a habit of recognizing our dreams and makes it much easier to remember them in the morning.
Write it down, Grace.
I do. Okay. I write it on my phone, actually.
Oh, good.
Oh, great.
Good for you.
She's already started.
Well, yeah, you go back through that record then and see if there's particular patterns that might point to the causes of these nightmares, so you can find that cause for yourself and then hopefully resolve whatever the issues are. Another thing that helps with that is making sure that you get good sleep, getting into a good sleep, a good sleep schedule, getting enough sleep, not looking at the phone before bed or any screens, making sure.
You got that, Grace? Put the phone down. That's what I tell my wife. Johnson, real quick, I want to take a call. This is Mary. Mary, go ahead and tell Johnson Miller, the author of Dream Patterns, about your dream. What is it?
Okay, well, first of all, I have to say I had the Pete McMurray dream. I'm not calling about myself, but except it's not Bruce Springsteen. It's a famous radio celebrity. I'm so happy I'm in an elevator with him, yada, yada. And then I wake up and I'm so sad. But anyway, his initials are GM. But I'm calling about my friend, honest to God, not me.
Okay.
We were just talking about this. I went on the computer to analyze this dream, but there were three parts, so I couldn't get the whole thing together. But, she says, men come in with masks on, and it's a recurring dream she has. Men come in with masks on, and they tie her up, and then they shoot or kill all her friends that she's with.
Wait a second. Let me put my hand on the dump button here. All right, go ahead.
Hello?
Yeah.
So the masks and the tying up thing. Johnson.
Right. This is...
it's a little weird.
One-off dream?
Hello? It's a recurring dream.
Reoccurring dream.
Oh, recurring, okay.
Give it to me straight because she doesn't listen to the radio.
Okay.
Right. I'm thinking it's bad.
All right, Mary, let him go.
Then it would be a dream to be concerned about. If it just happens once, I wouldn't worry about it. But as a recurring dream, yes. Again, like with Grace's dreams, this probably reflecting ongoing anxieties and fears in the person's life. What I would recommend is that your friend, first of all, start recording the dreams so they can find the clear patterns. But be paying attention in the waking life then when any sort of feelings like that of vulnerability, fear, anxiety are coming up, pay attention to the context, what it feels like when those feelings come up, what the source of them is, and if those issues can be resolved, of course, do it. If it comes from perhaps old patterns and feelings from childhood, patterns and behaviors, attitudes that are no longer helpful anymore, you can acknowledge those feelings and let them go throughout the waking day. And again, if there are some if there is an actual real present danger in the person's life, then that person should, you know, find someone to help them deal with that, whether it's the police, counselors, family. You know, I have no idea what the individual's context is here, but the person
right.
has to reflect on their own waking life to see what is the source of that anxiety.
So reoccurring dreams, just write it down and see if there's a pattern there, and then you need to figure out what's going on in your life, basically.
We all have a million questions for Johnson.
We
got to get the book.
Johnson Miller, the name of the book is called Dream Patterns, Revealing the Hidden Patterns of Our Waking Lives. Johnson, great stuff, man. Have a great Labor Day.
Thank you very much for having me.
All right, it's 720 WGN.
Nobody puts baby in a corner.
All right, quick look at the entertainment stories.
Wow, this is exciting. Breaking news out of London, England. Prince William and his wife, Kate, are expecting their third child together. They announced it just this morning.
I thought she was already pregnant.
Well, I thought she was, too, because you read People magazine, and they were speculating, but she canceled an event today. And then usually when she starts canceling, it's unlikely for Kate to cancel at something, and she canceled. So now they're like, what's going on? And then the Kensington Palace said, by the way, she's preggers.
She is exciting. She is so beautiful.
She is stunning.
He married up.
He's a good-looking guy, though.
I'm starting to watch The Crown on Netflix because you said you need to watch this show.
Isn't it great? It's hard. The first episode hard to get into, but after that,
I liked
in.
It.
It's great.
I liked it.
So good.
So far, so good. It's about Queen Elizabeth when she was younger.
Yep.
Wow.
They can do that show for a long time.
Right.
I'm excited. So they have George. They've got the little, what's the girl's name? I can't remember. Catherine. No, not Catherine. That's her name.
You mean the two kids?
Yeah, Charlotte.
Okay.
Thank you. You don't care.
I don't.
Okay, good. Moving on.
I mean, I do, but I don't.
Now, Lil Wayne. You know the rapper, Lil Wayne?
Uh-huh.
So he was here. Last night over the weekend, and he has had seizures. So they rushed him to the hospital. He's at Northwestern. They're hoping that he recovers. Now, these seizures for him have been happening for years, and they're hoping that he recovers in time to get to a show in Vegas. My guess, probably not going to get to the show in Vegas tonight.
Was he performing over the weekend? And then
he's epilepsy, so he's had ongoing seizures that come along with it, and so he was here. I'm not sure if he was performing in the city or not.
So he's in the hospital right down the street?
He's in the
Northwestern?
Right down the street, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Interesting.
We're hoping for a speedy recovery for Lil Wayne and get back on the road and back to business. Tyler Perry gave $1 million to the Hurricane Harvey Relief Fund, including $250,000 to Joel Osteen's church. Now, that caused like a huge uproar. Because
he wouldn't open his church last week.
Exactly.
But my church is there, but the street's flooded.
So I like Joel Osteen, right? So I think that he's a good heart. I don't think he would turn anyone away from his church. But what he said in his sermon yesterday was that, hey, listen, we had our own flooding issues. We had some trouble here. We were afraid if we brought people in that they were going to get stuck in our stadium.
I don't know. He's got three different stories. I don't know what to
believe.
You
heard a different story?
Well, he was on the Today Show, and he changed his story twice while he was on the show.
No.
Yes.
Today?
The Today Show this week. Yeah. Yes.
No, I believe that. I don't think that he would turn anyone away. But a lot of money by celebrities being donated to the relief fund. Pink wrote a big check. Justin Bieber wrote
a big
Rock,
check. The Rock, 75.
Yeah, Leonardo DiCaprio did a million-dollar contribution. Leanne Rimes. She dished out some
money. Is she from Houston? She's still around?
No. Yeah.
Is she?
Yeah, she's not from Houston. She's a Southern girl, though, I will say that. But a lot of people, Ellen DeGeneres, of course, she gave $25,000 to the Red Cross and $25,000 to the SPCA of Texas.
Ellen carries that in her wallet. She's got enough money.
Yeah. Ellen's got a lot of money. And then I just wanted to talk about Mandy Moore. Because she's part of that
this
show that
us.
I love.
This is us. You're right.
So you started watching The Crown because I said watch The Crown.
Right. And I told you to watch This Is Us.
I'm obsessed.
Great show.
Great show.
Starts in 2.5 weeks
I
on
know.
NBC.
I just got caught up, so I binge-watched all summer to get to watch that show. Now, Mandy Moore has a black eye because she got hit in the shower with the shower curtain. And so she went to set.
At home?
Yeah.
Come on.
Yeah, she got a shiner, and she had to go get stitches in the middle of the night.
Why was she taking a shower in the middle of the night?
It wasn't the middle of the night. It was like 9 p.m. Like, you know, take a shower before you go to bed.
I always, I don't really believe stories like that when people say they fall in the shower. I don't believe
it. But she's so nice. She's not in
trouble. She was drunk and fell down.
Maybe.
That's okay.
Maybe. But her cast members, Milo, who I love, And then her makeup artist and the hairstylist, they all put makeup on their eye like they had a black eye just to be in solidarity.
So she's
got to
be
eye.
Shooting. She's going to have a ton of makeup in a few episodes.
Yep, exactly.
All right.
I love the show. It's about love.
It is about love. I told you you'd love it.
I love it.
This is us on NBC.
That's your entertainment report.
Thank you, Jane. It's 10:32 at 720 WGN.
Ready, VTR 1 and 2. Ready on camera 1 with key.
3.
All right, and announcement. Get ready.
1.
And cue them. And go.
Happy Labor Day, 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, along with Jane Manzouras, our next guest, used to come on my night show when I was hosting nights here at 720 WGN on Fridays. I think it was Friday nights. And when I heard he was coming back to town, I thought, oh my gosh, good things do happen to good people. You can see him every weekend on Fox 32 Chicago. It's Rafer Weigel. Congratulations and welcome home.
Thank you, Pete.
Back.
Hi, Jane. It's
good
great
to
be
you,
back.
Man.
It's great to see you. I mean, yeah, we did. We went way back when you were, and we were, when I was doing sports and we talked Blackhawks.
Okay, you leave town, you're doing sports on ABC7, you go to St. Louis,
right,
and become a news anchor. How does that happen?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I knew. Yeah, you know, long story short, you know, I wanted to follow in my dad's footsteps and do sports here in Chicago. And Jennifer Graves at ABC7 gave me that opportunity. Mark Giangreco mentored me. But after a while, I just realized that, you know, sports was his thing. And ultimately, my calling is news. And I wanted to get into news. And I spoke to folks here who said, well, you're going to have to go to a smaller market to get your feet wet and learn how to do it. Because it's very different between sports and news. And the Fox station down there, which was Tribune owned, they gave me a shot. They made me the 6 and 10 o'clock news anchor Monday through Friday. And we, when I got down there, Ferguson hit right away.
I
got shot at. I mean, being out in the field. And then the one-year anniversary of Michael Brown, I was on the anchor desk. And when everything burnt to the ground and, you know, was on the air pretty much all night, I won an Emmy for anchoring the Ferguson coverage, and it was, you know, it was very successful. It's a different mentality between doing sports and news. And it was actually Ron Majors was the one who gave me the best advice about it. He said, when you're doing sports, it's all about you. Look at me, look at me, look at me. He
right.
said, now that you're doing news, it's not about you.
Right.
It's about everybody else.
God,
look at her,
right.
look at him, look at that.
Was it a big adjustment? Because you did, when you, second you started, you had those big news stories.
Right.
And it's maybe something you're not used to doing.
No, because it's always about me, Jane. No, I mean, it was
No, it's about your sister,
like
Jen.
Right now.
That's who it's about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, it was. I mean, but, you know, it felt natural. I mean, it is what I'm passionate about. I still love sports, but I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on in sports. I mean, I'm doing a fantasy football draft and people are asking me advice. I'm like, I don't know
anymore.
Everybody's
doing their fantasy football draft today. Tim Weigel, your father, did sports in this town for years and years and years. When I first moved here back in 98 from Rockford, Illinois, he's one of the first people that I met. He used to come on my show on Friday nights, too.
Oh, that's great.
That's
so
cool.
I got to know your father and the jackets, and I started buying the jackets. And, you know, here we are sitting here, and, you know, he's looking down. He's got to be so proud of you.
Oh, thank you, Pete. I appreciate that. Yeah, I mean, it's a dream come true to come back and to do news in my hometown. And, you know, I guess I had to kind of get out of his shadow by going to St. Louis where they didn't know me from Adam.
Right.
And now, you know, I'm proud of his legacy, but instead of following it, I'm walking next to it. Does that sound a little
Absolutely.
Too cheesy?
Of course.
But that's, you know what I mean?
No, it sounds normal.
It's kind of what, you know, so it just feels right. It just feels natural. And Matt Piacente and Dennis Welsh over at Fox 32 have given me the chance.
Okay, can we get a little inside for a second? Piacente was the best hire Fox has made
Absolutely.
In years.
Absolutely.
Matt Piacente worked at NBC, and then he left the market mm-hmm. to, yeah. you know, to do what he had to do. And then Fox hired him back. He's a Chicago guy.
Right.
And he knows Fox. That's what you guys needed over there.
Oh, it's the best. I mean, he's the main reason why I jumped at it.
He gets the city.
It. He gets the city, and he gets the business. He puts performance over politics. No, and he has created, it's an amazing environment over there. And people can sit there and say, oh, well, the ratings, ABC. Look, your sphere of influence or your sphere of reality is just inside that newsroom. That's what's going to make you happy.
Right.
You know, and when I walked into that newsroom because of the culture that he is building and creating, I'm like, I'm home.
Everybody's happy.
Everybody's happy there.
Yeah.
I mean,
there was a lot of stress.
Maybe they're faking it because I'm brand new, but it is honestly, it's
no,
a great environment.
Everybody's happy over there now.
Yeah.
He has changed the culture over at Fox,
it's
which
exciting.
Is great. Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Do you love being back in Chicago?
I do. It was pretty. I mean, I moved in on Sunday and
like last Sunday.
Like a week ago yesterday.
Because you were on the air last night.
I was on the air last night. I'll be on tonight at 5 and 9.
Oh, great!
Solo anchoring both shows. So please tune in tonight on Fox 32 News at 5 or 9 o'clock. And yeah, I moved over here to Streeterville.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, I'm 2 blocks away from work. Great. So it's amazing. I'm still like pinching myself a little bit.
I felt bad. I fell asleep after the game last night.
Most people did. We went on late. That's okay.
Great game, though.
It was a very
fantastic
good game.
Lead-in.
We were just basically worried that we were going to be heading into overtime. But no, it was a great lead-in. It was a great game, and that was the longest I've ever talked in my entire life. Solo anchoring for an hour.
So this was your first show back in Chicago?
Saturday night was.
Saturday night.
So,
Saturday night, you're about to go on.
Yeah.
Your first, I mean, obviously you've been on the air. You've been on the air in Chicago. You've done it a million times now in St. Louis, but you're back. Your first show, you're anchoring. Light goes on. Are you nervous? Are you excited? What are you feeling?
It was a level of excitement that I've never felt before, and I basically had to keep asking folks, like, do I need to bring it down a little bit? Do I need to bring it down? Because it was organic. It was genuine. Because, you know, look, St. Louis, Chicago, very different cultures. You go 4 hours, 5 hours south, and it's a different climate.
Yep.
And, you know, folks are very genteel. They're very polite.
Mm-hmm.
The difference between a Chicago and a St. Louis, like, I used to think that I never got recognized in St. Louis, and I would be out in a restaurant, and then I'd get a note, you know, on Facebook, hey, saw you at the restaurant, didn't want to bother you. And I'm like, bother me. Right. I want to be bothered. Chicago, if you're out and you're having dinner, and you could be with your child, hey, I know you, hey, what's going on? And they'll sit down
hey,
with you.
Hey, you're that guy.
You're that guy. What does the thing? Yeah. You know. We don't care, I mean, because that's, you know, Chicagoans, you know, so it's good. I mean, I had to learn to bring it down in St. Louis, but now I can be myself again, my gregarious, outgoing, somewhat annoying self.
Yeah. What was the first thing that you ate when you came back to Chicago?
Deep dish pizza. The pizza in St. Louis. Listen, I love St. Louis. The pizza is awful down there.
It's terrible.
It is terrible.
My neighbor is from St. Louis. They sent some frozen pizza up. I can't remember the name of it, but they just raved about it.
Yeah.
And maybe it was because it was frozen. It tasted like cardboard. It was horrible.
In St. Louis? They sent it here?
They sent it here,
and
yes.
They're proud of it. They use a different cheese. It's called
Provence. God, I can't remember. I'll think of the name.
What you may not know, but this radio station blows a hole all the way down to St. Louis. I told it to him in person
when I was down there. I love your city. I love being down here. I don't like your pizza.
Here's a new recipe for
That's
you.
That's all I said. I'm the same guy to your face as I am to your back, St. Louis. I'm not going to be duplicitous.
How long did you do sports on ABC 7?
I was there for just 3 years.
3 years.
So before that, I did sports with Robin Mead down in
Headline News.
At CNN Headline News. And
did it
for 3 years here in Chicago.
But you were an actor before that.
I was, yeah. I did that. I was out in Hollywood doing that for a number of years. It was interesting. I loved acting. I loved performing, but I hated the business. And it was interesting because it was like when my father was alive, you know, I wanted to quit and leave and go into the family business. And I was like, Dad, I'm miserable out here. And, you know, he really pushed me. He's like, no, you can't give up. You got to follow your dream. And it was like a Monty Python skit where I'm sitting there on the phone going, Dad, I just want to come home and get a regular job. He's like, no, you're going to stay out there. You're going to be a movie star and you're going to bag supermodels. Dad, I just want to come home and get a 9-to-5. But when he passed away, I decided to follow in his footsteps and started working in newspapers. Bill Ady at the Sun Times gave me a shot to cover high school sports. And then the LA Times hired me as a staff writer covering high school sports. And then my first TV job was in San Diego. I commuted from L.A. to San Diego, 122 miles, 2 days a week.
You did
doing
not.
Sports?
I did. No, I was doing, it was for their morning show, and I was like the Bruce Almighty. I was like the guy at the auto show,
right.
The pumpkin patch.
Doing the
person on the street.
Stories.
Fill 3 minutes, you know, what's your name, little girl, you know, that kind of deal.
Wow.
And then Sacramento, KLVR, the CBS station up there, hired me to be a General Simon news reporter. And that's where I covered, you know, the mudslides, the fires, and all that kind of stuff. And then Robin gave me the shot at sports.
Did you know Robin?
Because I did not know her personally, but we knew of each other. So,
okay.
And when I did the audition, and she knew that was my passion was following sports at the time.
Yeah.
And that opened the door for me to come.
What years were you there?
I was there from 2011 to 2014.
Oh, in Atlanta.
Sorry, no, 2008 to 2011 Atlanta. Here, 2011 to 2014. So I've moved a lot.
I was in Atlanta 2008 and 2009.
Okay. So yeah. We were down at the same time. I was out in like Smyrna Vinings area.
Sure, absolutely. I was like right in Midtown.
Well, you were the cool one.
I was on the radio and we'd watch the headline news.
Okay.
And I remember seeing Robin.
Yeah, but you just don't remember. I was on very briefly.
Did you know Robin when she was here at NBC?
I didn't know Robin when she was here. She had left here by the time I got to Atlanta. Good for her. I'm thrilled for her.
Robin, another one that used to come on the show all the time.
She's great.
She is great, and she was great to learn from because Robin Mead, to me, was really the best at being able to have that gravitas but also be personal. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like you just felt like she
was
just having a conversation
with you.
And that's hard to do. And she's so quick. And she was a great mentor for me in morning news.
Rafer Weigel in studio with us. You can check him out tonight on Fox 32. What time are you on?
5 and 9 tonight.
5 and 9.
And then every weekend, will we see you during the week too?
This week also, I will be filling in on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday at 5 and 9.
Great.
With Dawn. And then on the weekends, I'll be soloing, Saturdays and Sundays, usually after whatever game is on. I'll be on after the Bears game this Sunday. So please tune in. Please check it out. And
I love Dawn. She's great.
She's wonderful. Awesome. Everybody over there is wonderful.
And then,
I know.
So you're on Sundays, and then you go right into Lou's show.
Right. Lou, I'm not going to do Lou's show.
No, but...
Yeah, but then Lou is right after.
We'll do a nice crossover with our buddy Lou.
I got nothing to offer Lou anymore.
No, the final word.
I know nothing about what's going on.
I'll help you with your fantasy draft during commercials.
Thank you very much, Pete.
Rafer Weigel in studio at 720 WGN.
We love the Dreamers. We love everybody. Thank you very much. Thank you.
That was a quickie right there.
That was fast.
Yes. 720 WGN from Fox 32 in studio with us, Rafer Weigel. That was President Trump. Now that you're in news and not in sports you could comment on everything.
Right.
How do you keep your mouth shut about your opinion being news anchor?
First of all, as a news anchor, your opinion doesn't really matter. Because at the end of the day, it's not really my job to give the opinion. Now, when there's attacks on freedom of the press and the First Amendment, yes, of course you're going to have an issue about that because that's a it's a fundamental pillar of our democracy. You got to have that. So, Missouri is a red state. It's a very conservative area, and I've only lived in Chicago, Los Angeles, so I've only been around mostly liberal environments. So it was good for me to sort of get a sense of their thinking. The majority of the people that I found to be very supportive of Trump, even, in spite of a lot of the things that he's done, is because he upsets the left. And that's really it. So the identity, I do have an issue with identity politics on the left and the right.
Right.
Where you're all, it's like politics has become like sports now.
You want to put everybody in a box.
In
you're
a box.
Right. Absolutely.
Right. And if you've covered politics, as I have as a reporter, that it's more nuanced than that. It's sports fans root for the names on the front of the jersey rather than the back of the jersey. When you cover sports, you realize you look for the names in them. And it's the same with politics. You can't just, wholeheartedly endorse somebody who does something wrong just because they're a member of your party. You've got to look beyond the labels. And I don't think enough Americans are doing that. And I think there's enough Democrats and Republicans on both sides who I truly admire some of the things that they're doing. That's my only thing as far as, just a straight down the ticket voter. I don't know. I think we're in a different day and age now where you can't generalize like that.
Well, one of the good things that has happened with the Trump administration is people are now doing their homework and they're reading more and they're educating themselves on like this DACA issue that's happening this week or what's been going on down south. With the hurricane, I wanted to ask you about that. Did you see the hurricane coverage? I'm sure you have, and you've been.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
You've been covering that.
Yeah.
What do you think of the media? Because Trump took a shot at the media last week.
Right. Well, I at the end of the day, the media. I know personally members of the media who are down there working 18-hour days.
Ryan Burrow, we had him on earlier.
And all of that.
Right.
It's a tough situation because he's taking shots at the media. So we're all in the media. We all have to have an ego to do this job to some degree. And when they take shots at us, it's easy for us to kind of bristle at it. But, you just can't take it personally. That was a misinformed statement to say that, the media wouldn't go in there. The media is going in there. The media went in there for Katrina. Journalists have died covering wars. But again, he's entitled to his opinion.
I feel like that's his go-to. He takes a slam at the media. That's his thing.
Yeah. It's it's sports fanaticism. You know, he's got it. You know, he's made an enemy of the media. He's made an enemy of the Democrats. And it's working for him with his base.
Right.
It is working for that 33%. But it's not going to work beyond that. And it, and if they and if the Republicans want to have long term success, you know, they do know that they that he is going to have to reach out to a broader audience. And they are frustrated that he's not doing that. They have said this off the record to me, because they know you can't win with 33% of the vote. So, you know, they're in a bit of a crisis right now, because they know that they're probably in 2018 going to lose some seats because of this guy.
Right.
But don't you, at the end of the day, as a member of the media, you want to go in, you want to report the news, you want to report what's fair and just, and do your job.
Right.
You just can't. I mean, you know, for me, there's all these stories and both sides of every story, and you have your own opinion, and you have everybody else's opinion you got to get through, and you got to sift through what's true and what's not true. But when you're reporting the news, you're reporting
facts.
Exactly.
That's it. And facts do not have a bias.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, if you are stating a fact, there is no liberal bias.
So there. So what I'm saying is you can't, like, whatever he's saying about the media, and it prickles people the wrong way.
Right.
But if you know you're doing your job,
right,
and you're doing the right job, then you have to have that knowledge.
You just, your job is just to play that soundbite, and exactly, that's basically it. You know, that's just him.
Right.
Yeah.
For a guy that grew up here and then you moved to all over in California and you were just in St. Louis, now you're back at Fox 32. Illinois politics.
Yeah.
How crazy is it?
It is pretty crazy.
It's
honestly
just nuts.
It is nuts. The financial issues that are going on here right now, I got a lot of research to do. I don't know enough about the ins and outs, and a lot of people have various opinions with the pension crisis and that sort of thing. And that's been my goal right now, is to educate myself, to talk to both Democrats and Republicans to kind of get their take on this, because universally everybody agrees it's a problem. You know, and it's a problem that needs to be fixed.
Right.
And, you know, some are blaming Rauner, some are blaming Madigan. And, you know, I'm sure that there's plenty of blame to go around.
Right.
Well, it's interesting because they blame each other and then the school funding budget goes through and they're all praising each other.
Right.
But that's politics.
There you go, Jane. Yeah, there it is.
That's what it is.
And you mentioned Ron Majors earlier when you worked at ABC7 and your father. Who'd you look up to? Are those, I mean, Ron Majors is like, he's the guy.
He was the guy. Ron Majors, God bless him, sat me down the day I left, and he sat me down, and he just said, get out a pad of paper. Here's everything you need to know about anchoring. And it was one of the greatest moments of my life.
You
and
still have that paper?
I still have that paper,
you
absolutely.
That's
and
great.
They included what I told you earlier. One of the first things was find the media critic in that town and immediately take that person out to lunch.
Of course. That's always number one. Seriously.
And anytime somebody emails you or calls them, you call them back, you email them back. Even if they're screaming and yelling at you, you say, you know, hey, thank you so much for watching. Right. And you know, I hope you'll continue to watch. I mean, it was wonderful. It was great. And then, of course, you know, my dad, you know, you talked about him doing your radio show. You know, that was him. That was the kind of guy he was. I mean, he was gracious and friendly to, you know, the doorman or the GM. I mean, he was the same guy to everybody. And, you know, he always lent a helping hand to interns or people starting out. And so when I got here in 2011, I had a lot of people going, your father was so gracious to me back in 1998 and da 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 da. Is there's anything I can do for you?
Wow.
And I saw that, you know, that chain of gratitude, and I directly benefited from it. So I'm all about continuing that, because, you know, my son's 7, and, you know, eventually I want him to be able to benefit
kindness
from it.
Kindness is king. It always comes back.
But it's at the end of the day, why not? You know?
Of course. Well, we don't have time for anything else, really.
Right. Yeah. Be grateful.
And I was just in a golf tournament, Joel Murray, with your sister Jen, who I absolutely adore.
Me too.
Jen loves the psychics, and she loves the world beyond. Do you believe in that type of stuff?
You know what? I've had a lot of exposure to them through Jenny.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, they come up with stuff that you go, how do they possibly know that?
Right.
I think it's really interesting. I do. I think it's pretty fascinating. I don't think science can really describe it. I do think there's a little bit of a danger when you put too much into, or, you know what I mean? You just put a little too much
stake in there.
Yeah, that's all. When you rely on that as your...
If they're looking for hope.
Like, that's your only source of information, and that's what you're going to make all your decisions based on.
Right. It's a good compliment, but I think, you can get a little too caught up in it. And, you know, I mean, none of them said I was coming to Chicago. I talked to them.
Really?
None of them said I was coming here.
Wow.
Did they say you were going to make a big move, though?
They did say I was going to make a big
move. There you go.
Move. So there you go. All right. See, maybe I'm looking for facts and not a factual-based environment.
Huh?
Right.
Yes, and we believe in psychics. Rafer Weigel, you can check him out tonight on Fox 32. Welcome back to town, man. It's good to see you.
Thank you, Jamie.
And can we hang out?
I would love to hang out.
You have a 7-year-old. I got a 12-year-old. Okay. We can hang out with the kids.
Does he play basketball?
He does play basketball.
There you go.
My son is like, he's like Jason Williams, white chocolate. He's got a crossover move.
Really?
He didn't get his athletic ability from me, I'll tell you that.
You don't have any game?
I got no game.
I love playing basketball. I can play for hours.
Oh, you I'm.
You can?
Yeah.
What are you talking about? The guy. The guy. Look.
I'm a two guard here. I'm a shooter.
You throw out your back making the bed.
Okay, that was different.
That did really happen to you.
I did. I was making the bed because my wife's been out of town, and I thought I'd make the bed.
That when she's in town, by the way,
so
Pete.
Over, I pulled my back making the bed. Rafer Weigel, thanks for coming in,
thanks,
man.
Guys.
It's 720 WGN. Thanks again to Rafer Weigel. You can check him out on Fox 32. Just came back to town, started Saturday. Last night was his second night. Tonight, his third night.
I'm so happy for him.
He's such a good dude. You know, you talk about Chicago roots. We all grew up, well, I grew up in Peoria, but I knew his father, Tim, and sister Jen, and Rafe.
And I think from a viewer perspective, when somebody's from the area and you know they're from here, you just sort of like, they know what they're talking about.
We embrace them.
Yeah, they
absolutely
really know. No, it's great to have them in.
So good for him. Coming up next, we're going to talk about getting in shape.
Oh, I was just going to eat a donut.
I'm so hungry. You have Stan's Donuts in front of you. One of our friend, Fetting, brought them in. Stan's Donuts. Are you going to eat those?
I am going to eat them, but before the workout people get here.
I am not having a donut.
I love a donut on a holiday. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, I won't eat a donut.
Mark and Jeremy coming in from Shred415.com. Ladies and gentlemen. I feel like I need to do push-ups right now.
Wow.
Pete McMurray, Jay Monzuris, happy Labor Day, everybody. If you haven't been to Wrigley Field this summer, you really need to get there. They have a huge grassy area called the Park at Wrigley Field that
has many
events, including workouts.
Yeah.
And one of our favorite places to do classes is at Shred 415. They will be hosting 4 more workouts at the park at Wrigley on September 11th, September 18th. Then again, October 16th and October 23rd, we'd like to welcome in 2 of the best instructors besides Bonnie and Tracy at Shred 415.
Right, you got to say that.
The co-directors of training, Mark Beyer and Jeremy Walton. Great to have you guys.
Hi, guys.
Hi. Good to have
thanks
you.
For having
Did
us.
You see him flexing as the music was playing?
I hate it.
Not only are they fit, but they're handsome, too. So this is a great segment all the way around.
That's high praise. Thank you.
Wow. How much beer is too much on Labor Day?
Oh, can we start there?
Probably whatever you had.
Now, Jeremy, I just got your cell phone number last week, but I text Mark all the time and ask him food questions, beer questions, protein questions. Let's talk about guys, first of all. Men in their 40s, do they need to take protein? Because you told me, you got to start taking protein.
I mean, it depends on how much you're getting in on your daily nutrition, like just from food. So, for instance, if you're, you know, eating a lot of green vegetables. Spinach has some good protein.
Nobody is.
So that's the point. At your age, at my age, we need to have protein, but we need to have protein from several sources. So not just your meat sources. So make sure that you're finding, you know, spinach has a good amount of protein for a vegetable.
Right.
You need to beans have some good protein in them. Try to find protein sources from all different kinds of foods. And then if you're really lacking on like time, or if you're having a hard time planning your meals and prepping your meals, then maybe add in a protein shake every once in a while. But just, you know, I wouldn't suggest that you get all your protein from just meat and just like a protein shake every day.
Yeah, I'd agree. I think one of the things, especially living here in Chicago, is that we are all very busy, but you get yourself caught up in thinking that I just need to focus on protein as more as just taking in quality foods at all times. Oh. So, especially for the fellas, I mean, I'm a wings man. I'm a pizza man for sure. Burgers
Stop
are...
Stop it. You guys have like 2% body fat.
It's good.
I mean, I feel like I'm looking into a mirror.
I can't... I mean, do you eat? Do you really eat the pizza? Because you guys are just ripped. And I can always tell in someone's face if they've eaten a little bit too much the night before, because it always shows up in your face. And you guys are in, like, perfect condition today. So I'm worried
about...
Well,
thank you, Jane. I appreciate that.
I know, seriously.
Wait, are you talking to me or are you talking to Mark and Jeremy?
I was looking at those faces. People on this side of the radio booth...
I think I can speak for Jeremy as well. Like we do indulge every once in a while. I think, you know, the 80-20 rule that you hear a lot of times out there, 80% of the time during the week, I'm really, really good with my nutrition. You know, I'm very,
especially if you have kids, because you're going to cheat.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think the thing is that a lot of people hold themselves to this it's all or nothing kind of mindset. And it's just completely unrealistic. The fact of the matter is that high quality foods and high nutritious foods are to help you perform at your best. And that's in everyday life. So from work in the, at a desk or any kind of aspect of what your daily living is. But on the weekends, if you get to pull back a little bit, that is the time to enjoy yourself. I think the hard part is people finding the balance of what they can deal with.
Can we talk about the workouts in the park?
Yeah. Please, yeah.
What are these all about? There's a lot of people that live in the suburbs that haven't come down to Wrigley and seen this huge grassy area. It's like a
so beautiful.
What, two football fields, you know, or a football field.
With everything included, it's about two football fields. I mean, they, not to give a plug, but I mean, the park at Wrigley did an amazing job. Those guys,
they did it right.
They did it right. It's a family environment now. They have lots of activities going on. We were lucky enough to be asked to be the Monday night workout. So not every Monday night. When there's a game night, we don't have an event. If there's a concert on a Monday night, we don't have an event. Outside of that, pretty much every Monday during the summer from June until we're going to go, like you said, through October.
Right.
We've had a free workout. It's a free workout. We can fit 200 people. We've had in upwards of 150 to 160 people.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing.
How awesome is that? So we all love Wrigley. It's iconic. It's cool to go to the games or concerts or whatever, or just hang out in the area. But to get a workout right outside this building and right outside, you know, just this amazing, beautiful park. But when we think about Shred 415, so people that don't know, it's 4-15 minutes of interval training. So you're running or you're doing inclines or sprints or what have you. And then you're doing weight training and a high intensity interval training, like in a little space that has a bench and weights and so forth and so on. And you kind of switch back and forth. How do you do that when you're in a park that's all grass and you don't have all of the treadmills and you don't have the weights and the benches?
Yeah, it's a great transition. One of the things that really worked out for us is there's a lot of run clubs, especially during the summertime in Chicago. So we get to keep our format by doing a small run, about 2 to 3 miles max, come back, and then we get to use the facility as like an urban training center, using benches and platforms of the grass to do a lot of different body weight activities and body weight exercises in a big circuit. And then we shift each group in sections so that no one gets bored. Everyone kind of gets a little bit of recovery as they need it. And it's something different and unique that's applied to a space that's different and unique.
And it's fun to be outside and work out.
I mean, I think some of these days in the summer were pretty brutal.
It was pretty hot. Yeah.
But for the most part, everyone had a blast.
So it was fun. Yeah. That's a great workout. So now talk about, because I think it's great. I want to encourage people to go to the park at Wrigley and work out. I want to encourage them to go to Shred because that's such a great workout too. But you're listening, you're at home, maybe you live outside, way outside the city area or outside the suburbs. You want to get a good workout in. What's the key? Can we go on a run, and is it better to mix the weights and the high-intensity training with a run? Or what should someone do at home if they're just hearing you guys talk?
It's a great question. I think for us, our modality is to run and get like some exercises in. So for instance, body weight, push-ups, squats, lunges. People are pressed for time, as Jeremy said. I mean, everybody is looking for more hours in the day. And so if you are someone that wants to get not only a run in, but you want to get some exercises in, you know, run for 10 minutes, then stop and do some push-ups, do some sit-ups, do some lunges, do some squats, and then run for another 10 minutes. Within an hour, you will be exhausted and you will have worked a lot of different muscle groups. And, you know, we all love running, and I think it's very, people meditative for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. However, if you run every day, you know, they call it overuse injuries, right? You're going to end up getting some knee pain, some ankle pain, maybe some hip pain. So if you can balance it out with some side lunges for your medial glutes, you know, those butt muscles, it'll help support the knees. It helps support the ankles. So making the legs strong while you're running is going to help you in your longevity and be able to, you know, keep you running and keep you working out for longer in your life.
Even the recovery part is just as important. So a lot of times we get older, we forget that the days on, days off are necessary. So really, if you're over 40, working out 3 days a week with a day of rest in between, you're killing it. You're killing the game. It gives you enough recovery time so that you can perform at your best every time you do your workout. And if you're in those far reach areas where you don't get an opportunity to work out as often as maybe you would in the city, to do what Mark said in that kind of interval training is still a high impact, high intensity kind of experience. If you take the next day off and then the third day you come back and do the same thing, your results will come. A lot of times people think, like I said before, it's all or nothing. And it's the hardest thing is balance. The hardest thing is a certain level of moderation. And if you can maintain that for longevity, we always say that we're trying to build smart athletes because athletes that are smart are athletes for life.
So don't get down on yourself if you're not hitting the gym or hitting a workout every single day.
Absolutely not. Yeah.
Yeah, the recovery is just as important. Mm-hmm. Your body, it's stress is stress. You know, yeah. Your cortisol levels are high. And if you're not giving your body some rest and, you know, meditation, yoga, like that kind of stuff can actually prolong not only your own like fitness, quote unquote, career, it will help you perform even at a higher level when you do want to perform.
That's how right. long have you guys been at Shred? Jeremy?
I've been here 5 years. That was January 2012 is when I came on.
Mark?
Going on 6 years. September is my sixth year.
I mean, I've taken both of your classes. You look at me and say, that guy's the number one shredder out there.
There's no question. Sure. There's no question.
For sure.
I cuss at these guys. I mean, for a normal person, when you go in to Shred 415, it's like you're nice to them. You encourage them. Yeah. And then there's me, and you start screaming at me. Mark Beyer and Jeremy Walton in studio with us from Shred 415. They can go online and check it out at shred415.com. I'm going to take a quick break. Yeah. And when we get back, there's people listening right now that haven't worked out in 5 years, 10 years. Get them to the first step.
Yes.
That's what we're going to talk about.
Right. Love it. Sounds good.
It's 720 WGN. I love the Rocky theme because I have it. On my phone, and if I'm running, I have it kick in towards the end.
Necessary.
Music is motivating when you're working out.
Oh. There's no question.
Yeah.
From Shred 415, in studio with us, co-directors of training, Mark Beyer and Jeremy Walton. We said before the break, how do we get people motivated that haven't worked out in years? Jeremy, what's the first step they have to take?
Honestly, it's just a step. A lot of times people think that they have to step out into, you know, I have to run a mile before I can really consider it that I worked out. Or right. I have to do this before I consider that I actually worked out. Honestly, it could be one block. It could be a block. If you get up off the couch and you walk one full block and you're like, today I did a block. And then you create a streak for yourself. So if you consistently go with the block and then you, after 2 weeks, add one more block or add one more aspect. Or if you're someone, you can do all the basics. There's a basic fitness test that was back from... Kennedy days, right?
Right. So it's like you
push ups to sit and reach. Yeah, yeah, exactly. Jump. So if you were to take that offline and you put that together for yourself as a circuit and everything was just its baseline. And usually a lot of times people are comparing themselves to someone else. So you just create your own baseline and then you build upon your own baseline. So if it's a block, that's one power. If it's one push up, that's enough. It could be the one push up.
Right.
And then you assess all those things and then it's just a progression from there.
Work at your own pace.
That's exactly right. That's exactly right. Mark, go ahead.
Anything you want to add to that?
No, and I think
eating right, no more cheeseburgers if you want to lose weight.
It's got to be balanced though. You can't cut yourself off because honestly, after a week, if you're just trying to eat vegetables and all you're used to is French fries and pizza, then you are going to fall off that way. Like you're going to be back on that train eating the French fries and pizza in a week if you try to really neglect, you know, or you know, take out everything out of that diet that you're used to.
Yeah, it's a lot easier to add quality things and then the things that don't really work for you just kind of fall off. Like if you're not drinking enough water, start with that. If you've never eaten a vegetable in the last 2 years, try the carrot. Yeah, see how
but
it goes.
And then I think eventually it's like, oh, I'm not sure if I like drinking water or eating a vegetable or walking down the block. I think after repetition, after you start getting used to it, and then you sort of change your mindset. But I think it all starts with a positive attitude.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing. You got to go, I can do this. I can walk the block.
It's a mindset.
I want to get fit. And you feel the endorphins kicking in. And then all of a sudden, you know, this is the place you want to be.
That's true. Yeah. And that support system in this day and age is everywhere, from online to physical aspects. I don't think there's been another time in our existence that we've had this much support that you can take advantage from if you really want to.
And you have your friends. Take advantage of that because I compete with my brother. I compete with my buddy Peoria Joe. I compete with a guy that lives in Ireland, Sean.
Yeah.
And we send each other our workouts just so you can motivate the other person.
Oh, yeah. Not to put anyone on the spot, but one of our co-founders, Tracy, she got caught up in that step bet challenge. She's addicted now to step bet challenges. Every week she's like, I'm on this new step bet challenge.
I compete with myself.
Bonnie got my wife involved in that. She had to buy the Fitbit and the whole
thing. It's a whole thing now.
Yeah. I compete with myself because I know if I go to Shred, I'll knock out about 5,500 steps. Mm-hmm. Then I know the rest of the day I'll do about 8,000 steps. So I'm about 13,000. If I get less than that, I'm upset.
Right. Right.
You know, because then I didn't work out. But I can't run like that every single day. It hurts my hip and my knees. So I have to do something else. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, how do I make up these steps? What am I going to do? I'm like, it's beautiful outside. I'm going to walk around the neighborhood.
Yeah.
I got to get it in. So I always am looking at my Fitbit because I got to beat my record. record.
However, there's a difference between an activity and an exercise. And if people really want to lose weight, they got to exercise. They got to get that heart rate up.
Not necessarily. I mean, if you're somebody that has literally never walked more than a couple blocks in your life, and you start walking a couple blocks, you're going to lose weight. It's calories in, calories out.
Yeah.
If you maintain the same amount of calories in and you start to walk a couple blocks a day, you're burning more calories. So eventually you will lose weight. It might not be as fast, and maybe not as fast as you want it. And I think I want to go back real quick to like how to start. You got to find the why. Like every individual has to find the why.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
You wake up in the morning and you say, well, I want to get in shape, but it's why. Why really intrinsically in your soul do you want to change where you're at with your fitness level in your life? And if you can go back to that why and really find out that, you know, that question, then every day when you wake up, you go back to that. Maybe you write it down on a sheet of paper and you look at that. And whenever you're having a hard time, you say, I really don't want to do it today. You go back to that why.
Damn.
That's good. What
about inspirational? Push-ups right now.
Same for people that are in a rut. So let's say you're you know, you were active in sports in college or after college, whatever, and then you're kind of in a rut. You're like, oh, I'm bored with this, but you know you like it. So how do you get that? You go back to that why, or is it a new why if you're in a rut?
I would say it's a new why. I think that we are forever changing, and it's one of the hardest things that we have to deal with as we age. Right, we have to reassess ourselves all the time. I'm not who I was 10 years ago. I'm not who I was 5 years ago. And to be quite honest, you're not who you were a month ago. The things that you experience on a regular basis, you have to consistently be asking yourself, what am I doing, the purpose of what you do, and why you do it?
Yeah.
I think when you roll up your sleeves every morning and you're sitting there in the cities, you know, taunting you to come out and take the beating that's waiting for you, you have to roll your sleeves up and say, bring it. And so the training that you do in a studio, the training that you do outside, the training that you do is all to take advantage and to be successful in the world that you're living in. And if you don't feel that you're getting that success, that's because you haven't rolled your sleeves up yet. And there's people out there like us who all we want to do is show you how to roll up your sleeves and get to work.
Damn, I hate you too.
Live a healthier life.
I mean, Jane's shaking her head, smiling from ear to ear. I'm like, I hate these guys.
I
think
it's
great
fantastic.
Shape. Can we talk about gluten-free? People feel like if they eat gluten-free, they're going to lose weight. Everything is gluten-free.
Potato,
I can't eat regular crackers, but I'm going to eat four boxes of gluten-free crackers.
Red vines are gluten-free.
Gluten-free is for somebody with celiac disease.
That's exactly right.
Thank you.
The percentage of people who have celiac disease in our culture is, what is it, less than 5%, right?
I'm not exactly sure. No, it's a pretty small number.
Gluten-free, you know,
well,
instead
they have a
of crackers.
To gluten.
Yeah.
Well, instead of crackers made with white flour, it's made with rice. You're still putting carbs in your body, right?
Yeah.
A certain type, yeah.
Yeah.
I think with gluten-free, vegan, vegetarian, and this is my opinion from the years that I've been in this industry, I think that every individual is their own experiment, and I think you need to pay attention to how you feel based on what you eat. And then as you, let's say you took out breads and rice for a week, and you feel great, then maybe something was inside of taking those kind of starches in your body. And you're like, okay, I'm going to keep it to vegetables and meat. Let's say that you stopped eating meat and all of a sudden, like, you're getting a lot better feeling about your body from not eating meat. Then I'm all for vegetarians. But it's each individual person to assess themselves and to pay attention to how you feel after you move. And that's the same thing with your workouts. It's the same thing with your nutrition and the same thing with the calories that you take in.
Yeah. And as you age, I mean, you change. Your body changes. Yeah. Sometimes you become a little bit sensitive to some foods that you weren't sensitive to, you know, a couple years ago. So like Jeremy said, you really have to kind of pay attention to how your body reacts.
Listen to your body. My cousin's a doctor, and he said, just listen to your body, what you eat, how it feels.
Yeah.
If you have a pain that's you've had for weeks, go see a doctor.
That's the number
listen
one thing.
Listen to your body.
I got this thing. Well, did you go see someone? No, it's fine. It's fine. I'll just work through it.
We've all done that. Yeah. That's for sure.
For sure.
Wow. So today, have you guys worked out? I'm working out after the show.
I did not. My wife did. I taught class this morning, which isn't
necessarily a workout. So if you're teaching, do you take class? Or do you have to go somewhere else to take? I've always wondered this about fitness instructors because I see you in class, you're motivating us, we're working out. But I'm like, when do they work out? Because everyone's always fit and trim. Yeah. I'm
sometimes
like, where are they going?
Sometimes we take a class, a shred class. But there, I also, you know, work out on my own. I love running outside. I love actually doing like the workout that we just were talking about. You run a little while. Yeah. I'm lucky enough. I live close to the lakefront path. So I'll run to the lakefront path, do some push-ups, sit-ups. They got over at the Belmont station. They have like a little pull-up bar and stuff. So I'll go there and then run back.
You're
home.
That guy that's doing pull-ups.
I get embarrassed. I'm like running on. We have a little track where I live. And so I'll run the track outside. And then I want to stop and like do lunges or like jumping jacks or something. I get embarrassed because people are watching me.
No, you know what? but they're looking at you going, God, I wish I had that motivation.
That's exactly what they're doing.
Or I'm going to
exactly
order a pizza.
Yeah, I just ate a donut when they walked in. I'm that still was feeling the funniest bad, thing.
That was pretty priceless.
We have Stan's Donuts here, and Jay's eating the donut as you guys walk
only
in.
Only on a holiday.
Mark Beyer and Jeremy Walton, shred415.com. You can check it out. For people that have never taken Shred, this is what I tell them. Everybody's intimidated about taking a class. I highly encourage classes, especially as you get older, because it motivates you and you're in a group setting and you're motivated by the person next to you. But Shred, you hear about weights, you hear about running. Go at your own pace. Oh. Start out and go slow. You don't have to run at a 7.0.
No.
Do a 5.5 or a 5.0.
Right.
We coach anyone that walks in the door. They have the freedom to walk the entire class if they want to. There's not going to be any expectation on our end of what we need from you. The only thing that we want you to do is show up and we'll take care of you. The environment celebrates the fact that you walked in the door.
Yeah.
That's all we care about is that you walk in the door. And once you're there, our only goal is to take
Jane
care of you.
Jane loves you, by the way, Jeremy. She's
we just
want
to take care of you. Yeah. So we've had clients as old as 65 to 70 take class for the first time. And we've had clients who bring their mothers in who are about the same age, and they're sitting there like, I don't know what to do, and we're going to take care of you. We'll figure it out.
And that's true for any class. If you're taking a spinning class or yoga. I mean, guys need to stretch as they get older.
Oh, man, yeah.
And walking into a yoga class and you're over 40.
Yeah. And I guess you could say like that's the way you need to judge your classes that you take, is if you feel invited, if you feel like you're going to be taken care of, then you found the right place. If you feel like you're going to be judged, that's not really the place I'd want to go to. So.
And what I love about classes too is we think about so much during the day. We're thinking about work. We're thinking about what next. We're planning. We're doing all this stuff. And you go to a class, you don't have to think about anything. Listen to the instructor. We'll work at your own pace. Yeah. That's why I love classes. And you get a great workout in. And it happens like in a flash.
Oh, yeah.
The hour is here and gone.
And you'd be surprised how motivating it is, even for somebody that might come in for the first time and just needs to walk for an hour. Mm-hmm. And then they walk out of there. And because like Jeremy said, they feel supported. And it's a fun environment. And they finally realize that they can do it. Like, they found a place that they can feel comfortable. And
you feel great after the class, man. Yeah.
And this is where they get to experience what it feels like to be an athlete. That's the way we preach it the most in
I
class.
I like that.
Yeah. Is
that
everyone gets to have this experience now where they're like, yeah, I started walking. Then a month later, I walked and then I jogged. And then I never thought I'd run. It's the number one thing that we always get jazzed up about when we hear someone talk about their progression in the class format. Right. And I won't lie, we spike the hell out of that ball when we hear those kind of things. We're like,
sure.
We're killing the game. We're killing it. But those are the things that we hope for, is that people who never thought they'd want to work out are in a space where they found kind of a groove. And if it's not us, we support any kind of aspect that you found that works for you. If it's just yoga, then awesome. We're so happy for you.
I'm very competitive, and I've taken many Shred classes with Jane, and we just did, spinning last Friday? And I look over, I am struggling, and I look over, she's smiling, barely sweating, my shirt's drenched. I'm like, I hate you. I'm still motivated to do better.
Right.
Because she's right next to me.
Well, and that's what people next to you motivate you. Although I'm a lot older than some of the other girls in class. And so I try not to look at them running at a 7.0 when I'm running at a 5.5. Because I'm like, listen, it's not about them. It's about me and where I'm at right now. Yeah. And maybe that increases. And I have numbers that I want to hit. So it's all about it's a mental game for me. But it's fun and it kicks off my day. Even if you do it at night. I mean, I think I always say in life, our heads are facing forward, our feet are forward, and our bodies are twisted at our neck and our ankles because we're so busy. There's kids, there's work, there's appointments. You work out, you straighten out, and then you're set for your day.
Oh, it's the best recharge. There's no doubt.
Yeah.
I think I've taught close to 4,000 Shred classes.
Wow.
And there's every class, there's a moment in that class that I see somebody push through a barrier that they thought was, unattainable. And you see it in their face, you see it in their eyes, and it literally gives me chills, and it's the reason that I wake up every day.
Do you see the hate in the middle of class in my eyes when I look at you two?
Yeah, when the eye rolling starts, like, we know Mark, that we're hitting the right buttons.
Did you notice I said there's that one person?
That's funny. Good to see you guys. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for reminding us to take care of our bodies.
Mark and Jeremy, shred415.com. Just move your body. Join a class this week. Just get moving.
Put a smile on your face.
All right. It's 720 WGN. Pete McMurray, Jane Monzuris, happy Labor Day, everybody. Thanks to the guys from Shred 415, Mark Beyer, Jeremy Walton. I think the bottom line is, you just, as you get older especially, you kind of move your body.
It's so important if we want to live a healthy life. And because I host Living Healthy Chicago on WGN-TV Sunday mornings at 11:30, we meet a lot of doctors. We do a lot of stories. And yes, we do nutrition. We do fitness. But the most important thing I learned from every doctor we ever see is the best way to stay healthy is to stay active. So exercise, work out, move a little bit. I'll never forget, Pete, your brother, Ed, one time we had him on the air. I think it was off the air, but he had called both of us and said, Jane, I can't see my feet. What do I do?
Oh, God.
And I said, Ed, walk. You just need to move. Do something. 6 months later, he called us and he said, Jane, I have something to tell you. And I said, what's up? And he said, I went walking with my wife every single night since we spoke. I lost 30 pounds. I feel so much better. And that, to me, is such an amazing story. And it's the truth, because he was moving and he felt better.
Ed is that guy that if he just starts moving his body, he'll lose weight.
Yeah.
He's that guy.
He's a big guy. I mean, he's tall.
He's big.
Yeah.
He's the biggest McMurray.
But he wasn't moving, and that's the point, and that's what the guys were trying to get at, is just, doesn't matter what gym you're going to or if you're even going to a gym, do the stairs in your office, do the stairs in your house.
As you get older and you have kids, you start looking at your life, and then you look at your friends and your friends' parents. My father passed away at 70. He didn't really work out. He smoked half his life, and he wasn't very healthy. Passed away at 70. Of cancer. I look at my buddy Peoria Joe, his father, who played baseball and golfed every day and moved his body and still exercises to this day at 86 years old and still in great health. Because you have to move.
And a lot, yes, it's genetics, and it's based on, you know, what our body is made up of, and some of us can tolerate a little bit more than others, but certainly there's nothing that's wrong about moving and exercising and working out and eating right. So I think it's a great inspiration to have those guys in just to remind us.
Right.
I work out, but sometimes I get in a rut. I forget. I don't want to do it.
I grew up a fat kid.
You did not.
I did. Remember when I moved to Chicago, my face, you see pictures of me back in 98 after I lived in Rockford and drank and ate every single day for 6 years. In 98, my face was huge. I was 192 pounds.
Wow.
I never did cardio. And those guys, Jeremy talked about running. One day I said, okay, I moved in with my two brothers when I moved to Chicago, brother Dave and brother Greg. Greg, you know, he was in the reserve. So he was always in great shape. Woke up, worked out all the time. I'm like, I'm going to go out running. I could barely run a block. It was horrible.
It's discouraging too. You're like, oh, I can't do this. But you can.
Yes.
Yeah.
You can do it.
You can do it, which makes me want to just get a workout in today because I didn't get one in yesterday.
I brought my workout bag.
I do like to take one day off or a couple days off. It's important.
It's okay. You can do
I
that.
Know. But I will say this, too, and they kept saying people over 40. I'm noticing, you know, people over 40, maybe over a little bit more over 45, things move and stuff is in different places and you don't lose weight like you used to. And it's just all different than what it used to be. And it's a whole new experiment.
Yeah. How about a rock star? If you're on stage every night, how many calories are you burning?
Probably a lot.
Oh my
gosh.
And
can you wear a Fitbit if you're a rock star on stage
every
night? I
don't know. Well, let's find out. Let's bring in our next guest. Hold on. Our next guest is a rock star from Chicago. He is Jane's old neighbor, has a new album out with his little band called Styx.
Yeah.
This song is called Gone, Gone, Gone. I have the new album, The Mission.
So
it
great.
Is fantastic.
By the way, this guy puts the star in a rock star.
It is our old friend, James Young. James Young is J.Y. from Styx. J.Y., happy Labor Day.
J.Y.
Not James Earl Jones, James Young.
I just go J.Y., J.Y., J.Y.
Ask him about the Fitbit on stage.
J.Y., can you wear a Fitbit on stage if you're a rock star?
You know what? I overheard that, and yes, absolutely, it's the way I keep my weight down.
Really?
Is running around like pretending I'm 27 years old instead of 67 is a way to do that.
You are not 67.
Stop it. Yes, I am.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah.
You look fantastic. First of all, you're in great shape.
Yeah.
You're in great shape, but, you know, at night, when you're on stage and you're playing with your band Styx, I mean, how many calories do you think you're burning? 800? 1,000?
You know, I don't pay attention to, I don't have any of those monitoring devices that you guys were talking about, but definitely it keeps my weight down, and it, you know, there's a great thing about it builds endorphins. And when you love your job and you're doing it and people applaud you at work, It's the fountain of youth.
Think about that. You're people losing weight.
People applaud you at work. People applaud. No one. So being on the radio, no one can applaud you.
No.
Or boo at you because you just don't know.
I mean, think about it. He goes to work and people praise him. I didn't
like
really
a great
think about
report
that.
Card. That you're, what do you get the reviews? Like you get your mid-year review. They just do like a mid-year show. Hey, Styx, we love you.
We love you, Styx. I love the new album. I've listened to every
so
track.
Good.
The first one, I found out that you guys opened the show with it now. Gone, Gone, Gone.
Oh, yeah.
That's a great tune, man. It sounds like classic Styx.
Well, our goal was to kind of make a record that resonated with our most popular selling albums, that being The Grand Illusion and Pieces of Eight. And we went back into recording analog onto analog tape as opposed to onto hard disk and just tried to recapture the sound that we had back then and try and write with a mindset of that time frame as well. And I don't know, people, we've never had an album that's been received so many fantastic reviews. We get roundly slammed by the New York press anyway, and Rick Kogan was always on our side. But generally, you know, this is I don't know. We're riding a crest of joyful celebration in the sense that people are really loving this record.
It's really great, and I have it too. I love Locomotion, but JY, I know that you guys have a busy schedule. You are always out performing at a show. You're always on tour. You're busy. So then I thought to myself, when do they have time to sit and write and record this record?
Well, we even though we do play 100 shows a year, around that, in a way, there's an awful lot. You know, you're on stage for an hour a day, we'll do a 2-hour show on occasion, sometimes 2.5, depending. But like the tour we just did with REO Speedwagon and Don Felder, which just wrapped up after 28 great shows, we were at the World Music Theater back in July 1, I guess it was. Biggest crowd we've seen out there since 2003. It was about 15,000 people, and you know, but you're only on the stage, you know, for maybe a couple of hours. The other time of the day, a lot of times you're sitting in a hotel room with nothing to do, and ideas come to you and you write them down. And but Tommy's really the lead writer in the band, and he's got himself settled in Nashville about 4 years ago, and he's got an incredible house Donna Summer used to own. There's a studio in the basement, and he was busy down there writing, and he had about half of it written, and he came to me and he said, "Hey, I think we got a record here, and we haven't done one in 14 years." So I said, "It's time. Let's do it."
I love that.
It's been 14 years. It's time. It is. Every time we have you on the show, there's always a texter or a caller, and people say, "You know what? I remember when they played my prom," or "I remember when Styx was coming up." And you just said that you played in Tinley Park. You look out there, you see your fans, and you see your fans with their kids. You have to love that because people are now bringing their kids to your shows.
You know, it's really, we have a first generation of fans and even a third generation of fans now. Because of the concept of this record is, you know, the mission to Mars, which is actually a NASA goal 20, 15 years now from whatever, and we've been kind of invited there and hanging out, and the head guy that runs the Houston, we have a problem, that control room in Houston, he's a huge Styx fan, maybe 5 years younger than me, and his son, who's a teenager, was quoting me lyrics from the new album. It was kind of killing me. So we've got second and third generation fans out there, and it's you know, I'm knocking on any wooden surface I can find, because we've been blessed. We did some great work back in the day, and couldn't get along. But I think it was that sort of internal struggle we had that made every song have to live up to a very high standard, and the music somehow has withstood the test of time. So
right,
it really has. And JY, when you were, didn't you study? Don't you have an engineering degree? And then
my degree from IIT there at 35th in Michigan is mechanical and aerospace engineering.
And then you went to be a rock star. I mean, those are
makes
like
sense.
Pretty good choices there. You're like, mechanical engineering or rock star.
Well, you don't know you're going to be one, but that's what I always wanted to be from age 14 when I picked up the guitar. And I just happened to do it. Being in Chicago was helpful. I mean, a lot of people are not willing to leave their basement in order to be discovered. And luckily in Chicago, we were visible enough and got discovered and had a hit song finally. And that kind of opened the door for us to conquer the world.
Do you remember coming back home and seeing a little baby Shane Monzuras running around your street because you two were neighbors? Do you remember that?
Well, I was already in my mid-20s when my folks moved to across the street from Jane and her mom. And so my eyes were, you know, I was a bit nearsighted, so I didn't really see much. I couldn't see Jane. She could see me, but I couldn't see her.
Well, so, I mean, what an impact you made on this entire block of kids. So we're maybe like, I don't know, anywhere. We're outside playing alone, so we got to be at least 7, 8 to 10, you know, somewhere in there. But Jay White would walk up the driveway, and we were playing tag or whatever, playing outside. He would walk up, and he'd have these really cool jeans on and, like, awesome, like, boots and, like, cool belt. But he looked like a rock star, right? Because they had already made it and they're doing things. We would stop and we would point and scream, rock star! So I'm sorry that you didn't hear us saying that. But then everyone on the block went out and bought like a bass. You know, everyone had to have a guitar and everyone wanted to be in a band because of you right across the street.
Well, music is a universal language. And I mean, just playing music, whether you can succeed at it or not, it's a thing that brings me personal joy and brings others joy. You know, to listen to music, and so it's the universal language, and we need the universal language to communicate with people that have such varying views in this modern world of ours. And I'm right down the center. I want to listen to everybody and talk to everybody about let's find a way. Can't we all get along?
We're talking with Jay White from Styx. In the last few years, we've seen Chicago go into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Kiss, Cheap Trick, Pat Benatar, Joan Jett. And I kind of sort of know Steve Van Zandt, who's on the board of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. And I sent him an email 6 months ago. Of course, he didn't respond. But I said, listen, REO and Styx need to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. This is the music that we grew up with. We're seeing it now where these directors and writers are putting you back in the films. You need to be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Does that bother you?
Not at all. There's a group of 50 people that kind of are the final decision-making process, although I know they've expanded it. But if I were to be in charge of the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, there would be people that, you know, it's like the NFL Hall of Fame. There's so many people that deserve to be in there, but they only induct 9 every year. And, you know, I can think of a ton of Chicago Bears that should be in there that haven't gotten in there, that absolutely, in my judgment, deserve to be in there. So, you know, the most important... I think eventually we'll probably get there. I mean, it was great to see, but it took Chicago this long, and they
forever.
Were 5 years before we were. Cheap Trick, I think, Cheap Trick had an appeal more to the New York mindset that just they were just kind of quirky and weird and wonderful in a way that can appeal to the people that voted Blondie in the year before.
Yeah,
right.
So you know, it doesn't trouble me in the least. And I've met Jan Wenner personally, and he's an interesting character, but, you know, he's got his own... The crazy thing is he was Mick Jones from Foreigner. Now, Foreigner has been around before us, and Jimi Hendrix toured with Mick Jones in France when he was, you know, when he was over in England in 1967, 68. This was Jan Wenner's neighbor. Their wives hung out together. Foreigner's still not in.
Yeah.
So, I mean, if he's not going to let his next-door neighbor in...
How is he going to let Styx and REO Speedway?
Eventually, you know, it'll get there, and I think there'll be a fan groundswell for it. It took Journey this long, and they were really sort of connected to Santana way back with Greg Rowley there. So, you know, I'm very relaxed. I love what I do as a career, and I don't see any end in sight for it. And you know, to Paul Butterfield, I mean, what a great South Side of Chicago representative he was. He just got in a couple of years ago. So, you know, I'm a patient man.
And, J.Y., before you go, how are the Bears going to do this season? You love the NFL. You love the Chicago Bears.
I do. And I'm not sure I love the ownership, although I thank them for being at the start of the sport. But, You know, I think they're going to do better than they did last year, but I'm predicting them in the Super Bowl in 2025. Every 20 years.
2025, all right. 20 something years, to look forward
25.
To.
63, 85, uh-huh. 90, 06, and so 2025 okay. is the next time.
Okay.
Be patient, Chicago fans. They're going to get there.
You can go to StixWorld.com. JY from Stix playing Fort Wayne, Indiana on Thursday. Great to talk to you, man. Enjoy the Labor Day.
All right, you guys. Have fun. All
thanks,
right.
JY.
Thank you, brother. It's
okay. Bye.
720 WGN. Rick Kogan coming up next. Kogan?
Yeah, that means I can't go outside for 3 hours.
This is
you
true.
Can go outside. Hey, Pete, how are you?
Happy Labor Day, man.
And to you. I haven't seen you in a while. Everything good?
Did you hear JY from Stix talking about you?
Oh, man. If he was talking about the things I'd talk about with him, it shouldn't be on the air.
He said,
X-rated.
He said you always had nice things to say about Stix.
The only critic, I went on the road with him for about five crazy days in the 70s, and it was a revelation. They were not as nuts as some bands, and they were very, very businesslike, and Dennis DeYoung used to travel with his then little kids and wife. But JY, that whole band is just a phenomenon. What's JY doing? Is he still with the reconstituted Stix?
Yes.
Is
they're
he?
Still touring. They're playing now Fort Wayne Thursday. Yeah.
Well, I love JY, and Tommy's okay, but I can never think of Stix being Stix without Dennis DeYoung, who's out salt. You know what I mean?
Well, I've seen him in concert a few times.
Still sounds great.
Sound fantastic.
Do they really? They got a singer who sounds like Dennis? That's fantastic.
Their singer is so good.
That is fantastic.
Yeah.
That is fantastic. Well, go enjoy the weather, Pete. Have fun.
All right. Have a great show.
Take care. I will try.